You're fucking there, mate. So get in that car and fuck off.
Skip to the end.
Welcome to episode 128 of the Skip to the End podcast. As ever, I'm Ben.
I'm Gemma.
And I'm Mark.
And I'm incredibly hungover. So I apologise in advance. I'm really not with it today.
But it means that we get to hear your dulcet tones a little bit lower.
I'm sounding a bit more Barry White than usual today.
I like it.
Do you like it?
Barry Wright.
It's sexy.
You know what you need to do?
What?
Have a cider.
Oh.
That's a good chance.
So
yeah.
Wash it down. See how you feel. So Ben's hangover.
Ben's hangover. Thank
you. This beautiful Copperberg is either going to make me or break me.
Find out on this episode if Ben can make it till the end.
And what have we got coming up on the episode?
I'm glad you asked. We're going to kick things off with those dastardly deviants, our top three comeuppances in films. And they would have gotten away with it if it wasn't for those pesky kids.
Our rewatch this time is Dead Man's Shoes, and it's not actually a rewatch for me because it's the first time I've seen it. So,
finally!
Yes!
And how many years have we been trying to get him to watch it,
Gemma? I'm counting on two hands here.
Yeah.
So the time is now.
The time is now indeed. Our main review, we're going to rocket into space with Brad Pitt in Ad Astra.
Ooh, movie Masturbate, we're going to be going and talking about our favourite film of the one, the only, Mr. Alfred Hitchcock, who is dead.
Cheers for that.
Yes. I can't believe we've got to 128 episodes and now it's him, because for some people he is the best and the biggest director of all time.
Yeah. Well, stick around.
Also, if you want to stick around for something new, we've got a brand new game show and it's in Ben's safe hands, so I'm really intrigued.
It is, and I will do what you always do and give you the name later.
Yes, scoundrel.
And then, of course, we'll have all the other usual goodies you're used to from the Skip to the End podcast. We'll give you our pop culture recommendations of the week and we'll give you some cracking prizes as well.
Yeah.
Indeed.
I want to get stuck into it, guys.
Yeah.
Let's get started.
About this to kick off the episode, our top three comeuppances. Yes, we're going to be talking about those people, those rapscallions who seem to get away with it, but at the last minute they get their just desserts. So I'm looking forward to talking about this, and I hope you guys are too. So Mark, start everything off for us, baby.
It's Percy, the absolute shithouse from Green Mile.
Yeah.
Horrible, scummy character.
Not very nice.
You never like him from the moment he comes on the screen. Even just his hair, the way it's like got combed back. He's slick and horrible, like mine.
It's not yours.
Yeah.
And you hate my face, right? And I hate his. He's an awful, awful guy on this horrible ward, which is the people that have committed the worst crime. So it's not going to be likable characters on there.
No.
But we're introduced to John Coffey.
John Coffey!
I'm never
going
to nail that accent. And he's a nice guy, and he didn't actually commit the crime. We know the story. Obviously, Green Mile's a huge, huge Stephen King adaptation that did very, very well. It's always in the top 10 films of all time. But this character grated on me. From the moment he came on, his walk, his swagger, his arrogance. He was always cutting corners. He left the sponge dry on one of the executions, which
Bastard.
Is just unacceptable, in my opinion. The smell of burning flesh is not what I want to be dealing with when I'm at work.
Doesn't wash with you, no?
No, not at all. And then we see him actually step on Mr. Jingles.
Oh, the bastard. Right, no. That I had a problem with that.
Yes, it was nasty. Spoiler alert, it didn't actually kill him. We got him to be brought back alive.
Oh, my God.
Brought back alive.
Bloop, bloop, bloop.
But he gets what's coming to him, because at the end of the film we see him in a mental asylum because John Coffey has passed all of the bad, horrible, scummy stuff into his body, and we just see him lose the plot. He's taken away and we see him in this padded cell and you think, good, and I'm fucking glad. Honestly, he really does grate on me that bad. I hate him.
He is a complete heel, and it is really cathartic when he gets what he deserved. And you know he's always gonna. You can see all the way through the film this prick's gonna get it at some point.
Yeah,
such a naughty, naughty lad.
He is.
God Almighty.
And I hope he learned from it.
Well, I think he might. I think he'll go, you know what? I won't do this again.
Yeah, but
case closed.
You think at some point in the film it teases because you think, okay, he might turn face because he starts to realise what he's done. You think, oh wow, he's actually. You know, but it was all a big heel turn again because then we see him just leave off that sponge, and that's too bad. Yeah,
that's really got to you, isn't it? That sponge bit.
Oh, I can't watch SpongeBob SquarePants anymore. I can't bath. I can't shower.
Oh, that sponges, explains the smell.
Yeah, sponges now. Just unless they have to be wet.
The fuck are we
life
talking
motto.
About?
I'm not the one hungover, so let's throw it over to hungover boy Ben.
I'm going to go with Judge Doom, played by Christopher Lloyd in Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
Oh, what a fucking film.
God.
So this film came out 3 years after Back to the Future, so audiences knew Christopher Lloyd as the scattered but lovable Doc Brown. So it was a big shock then for people to see him as this sadistic and deranged villain, Judge Doom. And Doom, he's created this toxic dip that kills toons, and he plans to use a huge vat of this dip to destroy Toontown. But then we later find out that Doom himself is a toon, and he receives the ultimate comeuppance when he's killed by a vat of his own toxic dip.
Yay.
And the scene where he melts, do you remember this? The scene where he melts in the dip. It's really fucking disturbing.
Yeah.
It's like nacho cheese.
It's grim, isn't it? As is the scene where we first realise he's a toon. You know, when he takes his glasses off and his eyes, cartoon eyes, bulge out.
Yeah.
That's some weird shit. I'm amazed this film managed to get a PG rating, to be honest. Because, you know, that, and with a kind of sexiness of Jessica Rabbit, I don't think it's a very PG film at all. But it's a fantastic film. And something that I was thinking about the other day is, with this film, people seem to forget how much a big deal it was that it had characters from both Warner Brothers and Disney.
Yeah.
So you had things like Mickey Mouse and Bugs Bunny in the
same
film.
Yeah.
When you think that these days, Warner owns DC and Disney owns Marvel, it'd be like having Spider-Man and Superman in a film together. It wouldn't happen.
No.
But it was a big deal back then for this to occur. But it's a fantastic film, and I think it's one that people forget and don't enjoy enough.
It needs to be a rewatch, I think.
Yes.
I think so.
You know, my parents took me to see Men at Work. They did kind of, you know, get it good again, because they took me to the cinema to see this, and I'm really chuffed that I saw it on the big screen. But like you said, as a kid watching that face, that ain't good.
No, man,
that scarred me. Not as much as arachnophobia, but it still stuck with me. I'm not scared of people's faces melting in the street now. But you put a spider in the room, I'm leaving.
It's like watching Emmerdale on a Tuesday night.
Wow.
I don't know.
You're talking absolute shit. Me being scared in the street is like watching Emmerdale on a Tuesday night. Have we been on drugs?
Apparently.
I have no idea what the fuck is going on. I genuinely don't. And we're only 5 minutes in. Come on, Gemini. Let's just fucking you go and lose the plot.
Why not? Let's go. Nedry, Jurassic Park.
Got him too.
Oh, that slimy son of a bitch.
Yeah, he's horrible.
You know, as a trusty employee of the park, you'd expect a bit of decorum and respect. But no, he decides to double cross from the very start, where he's hired by that competitor to steal some dinosaur embryos. Now, that's pretty low anyway. But then he puts everybody in danger by shutting down all the security systems. So it means that the guys in the car stop. That doesn't move at all. And then, of course, the electrified fences that keep the dinosaurs in the pens gets opened. So this is an absolute bastard, and it results everybody going up Schitt Creek City. Population, them. So thanks to him endangering all the good guys, he finally gets what's coming to him. When he swerves his car off the road, and you think, yes, you're going to have to walk all the way and you'll never make it back because he's so heavy. But thankfully, he encounters a vicious little bastard that spits some venom in his face, resulting in Nedry no more. And you know what? I'm bloody glad.
I like the fact he lost his glasses as well, so it made it even more traumatic for him.
Kick him when he's down, right?
Exactly. He's not a nice guy at all.
So why do you hate him so much like I do?
His face?
Yes, yes.
I just don't like it.
Yeah.
And I hate the way when he eats his pie at the table and he has that squirty cream that he's hiding the stuff under, and he's like, don't go cheap on me, and he's refusing to buy the food and eating what the hell he wants. You know, I hate that.
He's that type of guy that probably puts in like 50 pence in an office collection when someone's leaving.
Yeah, or you go to Pizza Hut and you go around in a circle and you're left with like £6, you never give the money back because it just works out all right.
Such a twat.
Buffets should be full pay, £10 right. including drink. I hate it when people try and shortchange you.
What is happening today? What has happened to this podcast?
It's brilliant. This is why people tune in, man. Don't shortchange at a buffet. It's a fixed price for a reason. Then it doesn't matter if Gemma goes, I want the T-bone steak and I just have some scampi.
Yeah.
It's all about being even.
Scampi! How old are you?
Do you not like scampi?
I like a bit of scampi. Yeah,
yeah I do.
Rather a steak.
Right then, Beth.
Save us.
To you.
Jesus Christ. I'm going to go with Top Dollar, played by Michael Wincott in The Crow.
Oh my goodness.
A fucking film.
Mm-hmm. So Top Dollar, he's a crime boss, and he's the leader of the crew of scumbags who raped and killed Eric Draven's girlfriend, Shelley, as well as killing Eric. So this is what leads him to be resurrected as the vengeance-filled vigilante, The Crow. And then after The Crow finds and kills all the rapists one by one, he eventually makes his way up to Top Dollar, who admits that the gang raped and killed Shelley on his orders. And then they fight on top of a church. You remember this big fight scene at the end of the film? And then The Crow uses his powers to make Top Dollar feel the pain that Shelley felt for those 30 hours she's in hospital fighting for her life. It's kind of like the John Coffey thing, actually, where he passes the sort of sins
into him.
Yeah. And then this pain causes Top Dollar to stumble off the roof and fall to his death, and he impales himself on the horns of a gargoyle on the church. And it's absolutely brilliant because it's a deserved end because he's such a horrible piece of shit.
Yeah.
He's this pasty, evil sleaze with long, greasy black hair. He looks like something from Interview with a Vampire. He's absolutely vile. And while we're on the Crow, let's talk for a minute about Brandon Lee. It was an incredible performance by Brandon Lee in this film, wasn't it?
It's a film that I kind of know we've done the rewatch for, but I'd love to do a rewatch of a rewatch because I don't really remember talking about it and giving it the credit it deserves. This film is always talked about as being remade.
Mm-hmm.
There's no one in the world that should ever be cast in this role. I know it's gone into production at times and it's failed and people have pulled out. Corey Feldman, I think, could do it.
He'd kill it.
Genuinely.
Yeah. First choice.
Actually, I'm being serious for once. I normally take the piss with Corey, but I'm being serious. He grows his hair. He could do the character justice. No one else in the world. Maybe Tommy Wiseau.
Oh.
But if you actually think about The Crow, it's timeless. It's a fucking awesome film. And the fact he died in the making of that film is mental.
So much potential in his career,
too. It's depressing.
Do you know, quiz question here, who was his stunt double on this film?
I want to say Heath Ledger.
No.
But he'd be about seven.
Yeah.
I'm thinking long hair.
It was Chad Stahelski, who is now known as the director of the John Wick franchise.
Fucking hell!
Yeah. But it's a fantastic film, and Top Dollar's an absolute scumbag, and it's great when he dies on a gargoyle.
What a bell.
Have you watched John Wick 3 yet?
I still haven't.
I haven't. I don't get it.
Really?
It's out now to buy, and for some reason, even though I love the first two, we went to the cinema, we reviewed the second one, couldn't wait for this. I'm just like, meh.
Yeah, just haven't got around to
that. That and Stranger Things. Meh, whatever.
Oh. Still not watched it?
Jesus. But I am up to series 5 of The Office.
How many times have you seen this, though?
Oh, God,
I don't know. Cycle 85,000.
It's bad, but I just thought, if it comes off Amazon because of all these new deals and streaming stuff, true. I've got to utilise it now.
Mm-hmm.
Where, you know, Stranger Things will be here forever.
Do you know what is on Amazon now, on Amazon Prime in the UK?
Go on.
21 seasons of South Park.
Yeah, we were talking about this.
Crazy,
That's what I want to do. But that was a hell of a lot of viewing.
Yeah. I mean, what, 2.5 weeks?
I could book 2.5 weeks of work and do it.
Sounds like a challenge. Let's do it. My second choice is a lady called Catherine Mertoil. I think that's how you pronounce it. If it isn't, let's just say it's Catherine from Cruel Intentions.
Mm.
Oh, great film.
Played by Sarah Michelle Gellar. And it was at the time because it was quite controversial because she was known for playing Buffy in Buffy the Vampire Slayer. So she was a young woman slaying vampires and saving the day. But in this remake of Dangerous Liaisons, she's far removed from a heroine character. During the story, she makes a bet with her horny stepbrother Sebastian that he can de-virginize a new girl called Annette that's attending their school. And if he wins, he can basically do whatever he wants to her. She even says he can put it anywhere.
Oh, yep. God damn.
On the coffee table, on the forehead, in the ear.
On the forehead.
Anywhere. Yeah. Just laying like a little dormouse.
How do you do it on the forehead?
I don't know. You just sort of slap it, I suppose.
Christ.
Like that. I don't know.
All right, I'm leaving.
But
Ben's going to come back in about an hour.
My point is, she's not a very nice lady because she corrupts a sweet teenager played by Selma Blair. I was going to say but Blair, by snogging her in the park and telling her the only way to move forward in life is just by being a whore, which she does. She takes drugs and she sabotages others' attempts at happiness. Imagine my absolute joy when towards the end of the film, Annette, her love rival, she's lost Sebastian. This is the stepbrother. He's dead. He's gone. He ain't coming back. He's not coming back, certainly, for a sequel.
Skip to the end.
She decides to publish her diary.
To the whole of the school.
To the whole school. Sebastian's diary, to be in fact. And she's just basically left humiliated. She's got drugs everywhere and nobody wants to be her friend. So take that, Catherine Lelouch from Cruel Intentions, because I can't remember the name properly.
In the 90s, that film was huge. I remember it starting with Placebo, Every Me, Every You, which is a great tune. But everyone was blown away the fact that, you know, Buffy was an evil whore in a film. Because everyone, she's squeaky clean in Buffy the Vampire Slayer. She's that high school sweetheart. She's always lovely. In that, she's absolute filth.
Yeah, yeah. It just goes to show being a bitch doesn't equate happiness.
No.
I don't think I've ever seen this film.
Have you not?
No, I don't think so. And I've never seen an episode of Buffy the Vampire Slayer either.
Wowzers.
It's all on Amazon.
Great. Ooh.
And there's Angel.
Oh, yeah.
Do you never think you'll ever watch it?
No.
There's an episode, here we go, that's a musical.
There is.
Oh, great. Sign me up for that. Fucking
and you know who directed it?
No.
Josh Whelan.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You mean
Joss?
Joss Whelan. Yeah.
No, it's actually Josh Whedon. He's really cool. He's a really good guy. I've not heard of any of his other work. But yeah, Buffy's good, dude. It's one of those ones that I think back in the day it was brilliant. If you watched it now, you'd be like, oh, it's just time's passed.
It just looks very 90s. I can't imagine it plays well these days.
No.
Nah, never mind.
I was thinking about The Faculty the other day. It's been a classic 90s film.
That
needs to be a really
film.
Good rewatch, because there's some really good classics in the 90s.
Mm. Yeah, Clea DuVall, Elijah Wood.
Oh, really good. And they all don't really do much now.
No, apart from Usher. Usher's in there.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Good for him.
Going on nicely from Ben's choice on this topic, which was talking all about the rape and stuff.
Oh my god! How can you segue that?
Irreversible. So we see this horrific scene get their attention, but there's a horrible scene that goes on with Monica Bellucci. Monica, what is her name?
Monica Bellucci.
There we go.
She did.
Monica Geller. No, Monica B. And she is attacked on the way home in this subway, which we've talked about on the podcast for a couple of other topics. It might be like the most horrific scenes or something.
It's like a disturbing film,
isn't
it?
It was so, so bad. We've all seen this film, right?
Yeah.
That scene will stay with you forever. It's awful. It goes on way too long. But then the director defended it by saying, I can't really cut a scene that is a rape, and it's all about the build-up to this and how horrific her life was. There's no point in trying to glamorise it and make it Hollywood and just skip it and have a different
time. Yeah.
It's painful to watch, and it's painful to view and just have to digest, and that's probably what goes through the girl's head. So it's a real bad scene. A few minutes later, we see this guy who's going out on his revenge mission, and we see what he does to this guy that rapes her. And we've talk about practical effects, we talk about scenes that will stay with you forever. You can't unsee this shit. A fire extinguisher into the head, not once, not twice, probably around 40 times, where the face ends up looking like dog food. It's mashed up, his jaw's hanging off, he's still hitting him while it's going on, and you think, that's got to stop now. And it gets to the point where you just can't watch anymore. It's too bad. The sound is in the nightclubs, so it's and all you're hearing is this bam, bam, and his face is just getting more and more crushed in. It's grim, absolutely grim. But you have no remorse. You just think, fuck you. You deserve that, you fucking arsehole. So you're kind of cheering.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's not easy to see.
It's not easy to see. And like you say, the fact that he doesn't cut away from the rapes, it's like 11 minutes long or something. Insane, isn't it?
It's tough.
And it's tough to watch, and it's meant to be. That's the point. You know, it's meant to be horrendous.
Have you seen it, Gemma? Because you're looking a little bit lost. Oh, right, okay.
No,
so
I've
it's
never
a good film.
It.
It's very, very well made. But it's one of those films you'll only ever watch once. You'd never go, oh, what should we do tonight? Get beer, pizza, what should we watch?
Lads.
Yeah, it's definitely not one of them.
It's not a lads film.
It's a tough, tough watch, but I think you'd really enjoy it. And it's very, very well made. I watched it, I think, at uni.
Yeah, I'll get around to watching it at some point.
Yeah, it's an experience.
Excellent.
Come on then, Ben, finish me off.
And my final pick is Dick Jones, played by Ronnie Cox in RoboCop.
Oh, yes!
So the aptly named Dick Jones is the senior vice president of OCP, which is the company that's granted the license to create these robotic police forces to oversee law and order in dystopian Detroit. And our hero RoboCop finds out that Jones is corrupt and is paying street gangs to commit murders on his behalf, including a rival OCP executive. Jones tries to kill RoboCop, and RoboCop is prevented from fighting back because he has a directive built into his system that says he can't harm any OCP employees. RoboCop eventually goes into this board meeting at the top of the skyscraper, the OCP skyscraper, where Jones has taken the president of the company hostage. The president then fires Jones, which then means he's no longer a member of OCP, at which point RoboCop shoots the fuck out of him, and he goes crashing through the window out of the top of the skyscraper.
It's incredible, man.
It's absolutely brilliant. Have you seen this film recently, or do you have it in memory?
No, they've just announced Arrow are bringing out a special edition, and obviously now Neil Blomkamp's pulled out of the remake, which sucks, and I'm going to wait until this new transfer's out, because it's been years since I've seen it.
The best part of his death scene, Cox, when he's going out the window, is how atrocious the effects are. he's got these giant puppet arms. They look about 12 feet long. Watch it on YouTube. It's ridiculous.
Oh, that's a shame, because the other part, when he's getting his chest shot at, still looks good.
Yeah.
So it's a shame that bit sucks.
It does. And Ronnie Cox was great. He was really good at playing absolute douchebags. He kind of carved this niche for himself in the late 80s and early 90s, because he was also Cohagen, the villain in Total Recall.
Yes.
He was really good at playing that kind of absolute knobhead. So yeah, I love this film, and I absolutely love his death.
God, what a tosspot.
Yes.
Still, he's an absolute plonker, Gemma. That's what he is.
He's a dirty rotter.
Still to this day, like Old Boy, I've never watched the remake of RoboCop.
Oh, shouldn't have to.
Is it that bad?
It's not great.
It's not as bad as the Old Boy remake, but it is very poor, yeah.
Yeah. Who is it? Was it Jai Courtney, or was someone bland, wasn't it?
It was the other bland. It was the dude from The Killing. Yeah.
Is that good? You forget his
name. I know. Just merge into one person, like Station from Bill and Ted.
But the original, man, it is an absolute awesome film. Like, RoboCop is genuinely one of my top 10 films of all time. I think it's absolute stunning masterpiece. And now Blomkamp's left, they're still going to continue.
What?
And that sucks for me. Just leave it now.
Just leave it. Don't bother. Yeah.
He's kind of cursed at the moment, isn't he? Do you want to get involved in Alien? Pull it. Do you want to get involved in RoboCop? Pull it.
Yeah.
It's a shame. It's
maybe he'll do Chappie too.
People have said he might do District 10.
Oh, but they've been saying that for years.
Yeah. Or Halo film. But no, I'd be up for District 10.
Yeah, but for
Chappie 2, I'd never want to see. Fuck that.
Pull the plug on that one. My last choice is one of my favourites. It's Colonel Hans Lander from Inglourious Bastards.
Beautiful choice.
I nearly had this one myself.
If there's ever a character wearing a swastika, you hope to goodness that they get one hell of a comeuppance in the film, and thankfully we get a superb one with Lander. He's an evil bastard who serves the Nazi agenda, and throughout the film you would want nothing more for him than to get a grisly end. But we get something better than that. So in this universe that Tarantino creates, Hitler and all of his cronies are murdered. Slaughtered, dead, kaput. They ain't coming back whatsoever, because they're disposed of in a rain of fire and bullets in Shoshana's cinema. Lander decides to make a deal with Rain at the American lines, and he's quite happy of handing over his gun and his sword and starting a new life over in America. But not on Rain's watch. What he does, he double-crosses Lander, he handcuffs and double-crosses him, and he decides that the only way he's going to get through life is by carving a bloody great big swastika on his forehead. Goodbye, normal life in America. Hello, scumbag city.
Fucking amazing.
And I think Rain, I think Rain's line when he's doing that is something like, this might just be my masterpiece.
Yeah.
Because that's basically Tarantino talking as well, isn't it? That's him saying this film is my masterpiece. And I wouldn't argue with that.
Whenever there's Nazis in a film, you just want them to burn to the ground. And I was whooping and hollering with the best of them.
I haven't seen this film for a few years, considering how much we love Tarantino. Yeah. And after Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, I want to revisit now the old ones again. And I have like a weekend of just Tarantino films. This film, I just need to get straight back into it. I remember watching it in the cinema and my jaw was on the floor. It's an absolute perfection of film from start to finish.
It's incredible. It's one of those that whenever I see it, it jumps up higher and higher in my Tarantino list. It's just behind Pulp Fiction for me now.
I think this one's my favourite.
Yeah.
Just going to put it out there. It's so great. And every time you rewatch it, you learn something new about it. You notice something that you didn't notice before. And the love actually emphasises and grows more and more you see it. So, yeah, my fave.
Have we done it as a rewatch?
Never.
Crazy. Ooh. Well, stick around. We should. But absolutely unbelievable. So we've only had one crossover.
One crossover.
Pretty good.
That's pretty good.
Do you want to hear what social media said?
I do.
Yeah? Oh, you've come to the right place. We're going to start off with Twitter. Emma Louise at EmmaLou76 said, Amelie gaslighting Collignon, the greengrocer.
Nice.
Percy, the prison warden in the Green Mile, ending up in an asylum.
Fantastic.
Hell
choice.
Yes. And Brody, stink palming Jared in Mallrats.
Oh, yeah. Do you want another chocolate covered pretzel?
Yeah.
One of Ben's favourites. Not long now, due to the reboot.
Oh, counting the days. Lady Hyperbole at Rabbit's House said, Nicole Kidman giving Patricia Clarkson some cruel irony in Dogville.
I haven't seen that.
Lars von Trier.
Oh, fuck that.
She ends up killing her kid because Patricia Clarkson's character killed her plants or something like that.
That sounds wank.
Dogville, dog shit.
Lady Hyperbole also said Steve Buscemi in The Woodchipper in Fargo.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's a great choice.
And Bill Murray marrying Dreyfus's sister in What About Bob? Then we had Peter Pullman at Pete Kuru said Paul Reiser in Aliens, slimy asshole, fully deserving of a gruesome fate.
Yeah. Nice.
Takeshi Kitano in Battle Royale.
Mm-hmm. Fuck, yeah, mm-hmm. That's a great show.
Brilliantly protracted comeuppance. And Kathy Bates in Misery. They said one of cinema's greatest fuck you moments.
See, Mark, you've been watching Castle Rock of late, haven't
yes.
you? Yes. Because I think season two starts soon, and I think the main character that Kathy Bates played, she's coming into
yeah.
Castle Rock season two.
That's going to be amazing. Mm.
Oh, no way.
Yeah. So yeah. Honestly, series one at the moment, it'd easily make my skips running. When I finished it,
yeah.
I've got like a couple of episodes left. It's phenomenal. I can't wait. There's so many great little nods. You'd love it.
Oh.
Absolutely be all over it.
I love my boy, Stephen. Matt Lewinsky. At Podcast Hitman said Skeletor in Masters of the Universe got thrown into an abyss after destroying Eternia and Earth.
They're making a new He-Man film.
Whoops.
Apparently.
Have you heard about the animated series that's going to Netflix?
No.
It's been written by Kevin Smith and it's been greenlit.
Snoochie Boochie, He-Man.
I need to move on incredibly quickly.
I have
quickly.
The power of Blunt Man. Fans, oh, fuck
I'm gonna,
this.
Right. I'm going to move on incredibly fast before it all kicks off.
It's true, that is too.
I'm going to cancel my Netflix subscription.
If you're listening, Netflix. Matt also said Bobby Boucher's dad in The Waterboy caused Mama to be so crazy and prevents Bobby from playing fool's ball.
Yeah.
And Dan in Waiting, the douche hitting on underage employees gets revenge on a-hole customers.
That film's really good.
I love Waiting.
I do. It's very underrated.
Very.
Yeah.
I don't think I've seen that.
It's about a group of like waiters who work in kind of like a...
Like a Hobson's Choice or a Frankie and Benny's.
Yeah, one of those kind of themed restaurant type things. And it's really low key. There's not really a plot to it. It's just about what they get up to. You dig it, actually.
Yeah,
I think you really like
great.
It.
Ryan Reynolds, Dane Cook, it's
Waiting.
Yeah.
All right, cool.
Don't there watch Waiting 2, though. Not as good as Waiting.
Yeah.
There's actually a sequel.
Mm-hmm. There was actually
fucking
a sequel.
Hell. Mm-hmm. Still Waiting.
I think that might be what it's called.
Oh, it is, are you
serious?
Yeah.
Oh, God. Yeah. Damn.
You've seen that before. Over to Facebook, we got Craig Mileson said the Hillbillies in Deliverance.
Yeah.
Because they were not very nice. Joey Zaza in The Godfather Part 3.
Mm-hmm.
And Joe Pesci in Goodfellas.
Goodfellas. Hell of a film.
Yeah.
Mm. Russell Hewitt said, Warden Norton realising he was played by Andy in The Shawshank Redemption. Ben Affleck getting covered in paint in Dazed and Confused.
Nice.
And Chris Pratt getting cracked with that keyboard in Wanted. Don't know if it was musical or computer.
Chris Pratt was in Wanted?
Apparently so.
Wow. I haven't seen that film in years.
Which one's that?
James McAvoy.
Yeah.
I haven't seen that.
Yeah,
me neither.
And Angelina Jolie.
Oh,
yes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I do remember that. Yeah, that was like an absolute CGI fest, and the car and she
because it was like the bullets that bend and all that.
That was pretty cool.
Good. And then finally, we have Martin White, who said Agent Smith blowing up into a million pieces at the end of The Matrix.
Mm-hmm. Brilliant.
Billy Drago's Nitty getting pushed off the roof by Kevin Costner's Elliot Ness in The Untouchables.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
And Matt Damon getting shot in the head at the end of The Departed.
Fucking incredible.
Amazing.
Thank you very much, guys. And as always, keep them coming in.
Whose choice is it next for the topic?
It is me. So all the way back on episode 102, our topic was the top three bad performances from great actors. So let's flip the script.
Oh.
We're going to do our top three great performances from bad actors. So it's those unexpectedly great performances from actors who are generally considered to be shit at their job.
If anyone brings Corey, I'm quitting the podcast.
What can you tell us about the Lima Project?
The ship disappeared approximately 16 years into the mission.
And the commander was...
He was my father, sir.
Our review this time round is Ad Astra. Roy McBride is an astronaut sent on a mission to Neptune to search for his father Clifford, a fellow astronaut who went missing in space 14 years earlier. Roy's mission causes him to uncover some uncomfortable truths as he races to protect humanity from catastrophe. Roy is played by Brad Pitt, and his father is played by Tommy Lee Jones, with supporting turns from Ruth Negger, Donald Sutherland, and Liv Tyler. We will be discussing major plot points of the film as well as the ending, of course, so take this as your spoiler alert. Gemma, I'm going to throw this over to you first. Is it Ad Astra or is it Bad Astra?
It's one of the most beautiful films of this year, but my God, it left me so vacant.
Mm-hmm.
I find it very hard to connect with this film. And that's not to detract anything away from the performances, which are very good. They are stellar or interstellar.
Ugh, if terrible. You will. Sucker.
But I can't help feeling empty when I left the screen. So a mixed bag of emotions.
Thank you, Gemma. Mark, is it Ad Astra or is it Sad Astra?
Voxel Astra.
I'm going to sound just like Gemma. I thought it was stunning. The cinematography was perfect. I thought Brad Pitt was phenomenal. I had no emotional attachment to any character, and it fucking felt like 3 days long. So when I left, I was like, have I got any soul left? Have I got any affection left in my body? What time is it? What day is
it? Who am
it?
I? Where am I?
I was just done. But to look at, fuck me, that's a Oscar film right now for cinematography, but that's about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, short version, it's really fucking boring. It is an incredibly well-made film, as you both said, and I know a lot of critics have absolutely raved about it, but it's just not for me. I can't say it's a bad film, it's clearly not, but it's just not for me. I didn't enjoy it at all. The main issue, I think, is I just didn't find it entertaining.
Yeah, very, very long, waiting for something to happen. But thankfully, we have zombie space monkeys.
What the actual fuck were the evil space baboons about?
Space baboons. Come on, Ben. Space baboons. They're getting a spin-off.
There wasn't even any allusion to the fact that this was going to be an issue later on in the film. So when it did happen, I suddenly thought, oh, maybe they've interjected it with 28 days later. But lo and behold, no, it was part of the story. Very jarring.
The whole film is really boring because it's... I thought it was going to be about the space journey, but it's not. It's about Brad Pitt's character's emotional journey, and I don't give a flying fuck about that. But there are two moments in the film where all of a sudden it becomes an action film. So you've got the weird space baboons, and then you have the bit a little bit earlier with the space pirates.
Oh, yeah, Mad Max.
Where did they come from?
And why was it not followed up on? What was the point of either of those scenes?
Also, how did they get onto the moon? Because you saw how they got onto that Virgin Atlantic rocket, taking them to the moon.
There was no good science behind any of the things in this.
How did they get there? Because surely, if you've got a criminal record, you're going to get checked at security, and they're going to do everything they can to send you back without... They might not filled in their visas.
That's how you get around it.
I don't know.
Moon pirates, I did not understand what the fuck was going on, but it felt like Mad Max. It was all getting crashed. I was like, this is awesome. I wanted to get my controller out and play. I was like, this is amazing.
I worry that we're giving the listeners the wrong impression of this film, because we're talking about space baboons and moon pirates. Yeah. That makes it sound awesome. It wasn't.
Sign me up.
It was really fucking shit.
But there was no context behind those two scenes, so that's why it threw us off. But it's such a weird film because it's such a slow pace, and we have all this big story about how Brad Pitt is on a mission to find his father after so long, and then, you know, skip to the end. He meets his dad. His dad's like, I'm all right, actually. Just let me go. Yeah. And he's like, all right, see you later. Bye.
Before he boomerangs him into space.
Yeah, like, all right, see ya.
See you later.
Let me give you a hand.
See you, son. Take care, mate. And that's it. Like, I'm going home now.
Send a space guy.
Rubbish. And I really hated the voiceover. It's so overbearing because he never says anything of interest. He just spells out his feelings over and over again. It's like, we get it. You're a bit depressed. Fucking shut up.
Did you feel like it was kind of like a budget?
You should be a counsellor, mate, honestly.
Did you feel like it was like a budget Apocalypse Now?
When I read reviews for this beforehand, and people said it's kind of like a cross between 2001 and Apocalypse Now, so I'm like, wow, that sounds good. It's like neither.
No. Visually, though, I'll be honest, it's up there with like Interstellar. It's one of the best visual films I've seen in a very long time.
Well, it's the same cinematographer as Interstellar. It's Hoyte van Hoytema. Oh. He is brilliant at that kind of thing. Some of the scenes where they're on the moon especially look absolutely gorgeous. Can't fault the look of the film at all. I can just fault everything else about it. And Gemma, you mentioned it there, the fact that the rocket that he gets to the moon is a Virgin Atlantic rocket. How much did Richard Branson pay him for that?
He must have rubbed his little hands with glee.
Not good. I thought Jupiter looked really good.
Jupiter
I like the
very
rings.
Pretty.
That looked really pretty.
I did like the opening sequence when Brad Pitt's character is climbing that massive ladder that sort of cuts between the sky and space. I thought that sequence was really breathtaking, and the lack of sound effects made it more realistic and authentic, like it was in that abyss of space. I thought that whole sequence was really, really exciting. But then the level kind of just dropped Until the space baboons came back.
I thought Brad Pitt was fantastic for what he had to do, and it's his year, isn't it? When you think of that and Once Upon a Time, you think to yourself, he's had a fucking good year, and he's shown that he can still pull out these performances that are Oscar-worthy.
And bearing in mind, the majority of dialogue that Brad Pitt delivers is those monologues.
Yeah.
The best bit for me in terms of Pitt's performance is when he first gets to that base and he sends that message to his dad, and then he starts to tear up. I thought that was absolutely brilliant from Pitt. I think Pitt is going to be nominated for 2 Oscars.
Me too.
I think he's going to be nominated for Best Supporting Actor for Once Upon a Time and Best Lead Actor for this.
I think he's got more chance of Once Upon a Time.
Yeah, imagine getting both. Has anyone ever done that? That'd be awesome. It's like, just sitting there.
Won both. Yeah, I don't think so. Not in the same year.
Nah. That would be unreal.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a testament to his performance because even when he wasn't talking, I found that he was very good at emoting sort of anguish and pain and that sense of loss, but I just wish that rather than contain it, to just let it all out. If you wanted to cry, have a huff and have a good cry.
Yeah.
It was a very subtle and reserved performance from him, and it is a great performance. I thought Tommy Lee Jones was better, though. I really liked when we got to meet the present-day Tommy Lee Jones on the ship, and he's kind of gone stir-crazy.
Yeah.
I thought he was really good.
Just ravaged by madness. Mm-hmm.
It made me miss him and want to go back and watch Men in Black 2.
Not the first one, the second.
Let's go straight to the second one. But he's not been on screen for a long time, and he's capable of good performances.
Mm. He is. I don't understand why they hired Liv Tyler and Natasha Lyonne to be in like two scenes. They absolutely wasted.
I was delighted when I saw Natasha Lyonne, but she didn't do anything. She just went, just chuck your bag over here. Thanks, love. Have a good day. Yeah. Enjoy the moon or enjoy Mars.
The space baboons got more time than she did.
Yes, and that's not fair. Yeah.
Space baboons. Do you know what I mean? The thing is, you're right though. People listen, like, I'm going to go and see that. If there's baboons going mental trying to eat people's faces.
Didn't he have a little snack? A little snack in the nose. Nom.
If you're going to get attacked by a baboon in space, wear a proper mask.
Please do.
Because they'll knock through glass.
They will do. And, you know, if you've got some gaffer tape, that might save you. But obviously,
I love that. These gaffer tape. Oh,
quick,
cheers,
wrap
mate.
It around, his head.
A bit late.
Oh, I tell you what I call bullshit on. That scene where Pitt sneaks onto the ship as it's launching. What? He'd have been burnt to a crisp.
Yeah.
Absolute bollocks.
I've read on, I think it was Facebook today, someone had done all the things that were wrong, and its science would put, you know, if you actually put it into scale and stuff, literally everything in the whole film was wrong.
Yeah.
The amount of time he was off the ship, the way he went and got his dad and like reached out and pulled him. He's like, come on, dad, on you come. All bullshit.
But didn't he just sort of go, nah, not today? And then he kind of just ricocheted himself off of the...
Off the rope, wasn't it?
Yeah, bye.
Bullshit.
And then he was surfing through space on that piece of the ship, wasn't he?
Oh, he was when he jumped the shark.
The more I talk about this, the more I realise I absolutely hated it.
Yeah. I mean, it's pretty to look at.
I said, I think, to Ben on the way out, for me, it's a film that if you were buying a new telly, you put it on as your demo disc to go, wow, look at the colours. Look how great the definition is in 4K.
Or if you work in a TV shop.
Yes.
That's probably
Richer
your best.
Sounds.
There we go.
That's what would be on my demo disc. But apart from that, there's no use for it.
I want to score it because I'm sick of talking about it.
Okey-dokey.
Wow. Gemma, what are you giving it?
It's very pretty, but that there does not make a good film. I'm going to give it 6 out of 10.
Fair enough. Marky Mark?
7. I did think it looked fucking brilliant. And the cinematography for our boy himself, he did a great job. And Brad Pitt was fucking amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a bit of soul at one point, I think. Just there was a little bit of soul at the start. That was it. But yeah, 7's a good score.
I'm giving it 5. I thought it was an absolute dog egg.
Put that on the poster.
So that gives it a skip to the end score of 6 out of 10.
It's competition time! Yeah!
Bravo!
Excellent.
Nice. Feel good about that. So, by that introduction, it's time to announce the winners of our last episode, but also give away some amazing prizes to celebrate this episode. So on the last episode, we reviewed It Chapter 2. And for that, we had some amazing Funko Pennywises with various different variants. So we had the balloons, we had the funhouse, and just the standard one with the horrible teeth.
Yeah.
And to give this set away, we threw in some keyrings and a large Pennywise, which is about that big, which is about 10 inches.
It's a big one.
Listen, 10 inches. Yeah, 10 inches. My arms are really wide. So To win this amazing prize, the question we put out there was Bill Hader plays which character in It Chapter 2? So Poochie.
Richie.
And Marcus Jones will be getting those in the post. Good old Factory Entertainment came along and gave us a plush doll of Pennywise and the Georgie die-cast boat, which is pretty smart. I would not recommend doing that in the street, because if it does go down one of those covers, you might lose an arm. You never know.
Never know.
James McAvoy plays which character in the film It Chapter 2? So Ben.
Bill.
It's True and Zombie Paul 1981. We'll be getting that in the post. Warner Brothers came along to celebrate the release of It Chapter 2. And remember the list of all the prizes. I'm not going to read it all again. There was everything. There was laptop stickers and badges and balloons and you name it. If it's got it on it, yeah, it would have it. Jessica Chastain.
Well done.
Thank you, guys. Plays who in It Chapter 2?
Beverly.
It's True. And Kenny Whitmore will be getting that in the post. Last Exit came along. And just before we do this, they've actually given us some prizes this time round. Yeah. So, Poochie, here's one for you.
Ah, gorgeous.
What is it?
Hands Across America.
And I went for the same look. Here we go. This is a beautiful tea.
And what's that from?
Us.
Ah.
Have you seen that yet?
No.
Nope. Never. Will you ever?
Nope.
And Ben, what have you got?
I have got a Wallace Corporation t-shirt in honour of Blade Runner 2049.
That's nice, mate. Subtle, isn't it?
Yeah.
Lovely. So to celebrate the release of Alien from Last Exit to Nowhere, they've got a brand new design. We put a question out there. It was really simple. Who stars as Ripley in the iconic, absolute masterpiece Alien?
It's a double there.
Yes.
Sigourney Weaver.
Sean Whitchurch agrees, and he'll be getting that t-shirt in the post. If you want to look like me and Gemma, you can win one of these Us t-shirts. We put it out there. Really, really simple. Winston Duke plays who in the film Us?
Gabe.
I would like to see Gabe from The Office in a film set with... What's the director called again?
Jordan Peele.
That would be cool. Them two working together.
Then you'd have like good Gabe, evil Gabe.
Oh, that's amazing. That's what I want to see. Oh shit, I better announce the winner. Russell Lovat will be getting that in the post.
Cool.
Some cool prizes there. Should we give away some more shit?
Yes!
Okay then, so this was really difficult because no one's really doing much merch for our main review. Also, Dead Man's Shoes, no one's giving away any merch. No. Could have given away a Dead Man's Shoes, could have done that. But instead, we've got the brand new Last Crusade t-shirt from Indiana Jones from our good friends at Last Exit to Nowhere. So let's make it really simple. Who plays Indiana Jones? They also came along because the new Terminator film's coming out and they're going to give us a Skynet cap. But also, Ben, you'll love this, a tote bag of Tremors.
Ooh!
Can I have one? No. Who directed the original Terminator? Funko, like, right, Mark, seriously, I've got nothing. Like, Dead Man's Shoes, no. Hitchcock, we've got one Hitchcock Funko, but that's about it. So they've said you can have the full set of the brand new Tom Hanks big Funko.
Ooh! Oh, because they've got the Zoltar one as well, haven't they? That's amazing.
So let's say... What is the fortune teller called?
What is it going to be?
Okay. They've also got a Castaway Funko, so it's all big. This, you know, Tom Hanks, that's what it's all about. What is the name of the ball that he has with him on the island?
How's he got a Funko of the ball?
That would be incredible.
That would be really cool. But, yes, let's also give away a Alfred Hitchcock black and white Funko. Let's say, how many Oscars has Alfred Hitchcock won in his career?
It's a good question.
Don't you love how Mark does a little bit of acting there? What should it be, even though he's got it written down on a piece of paper in front of him?
I wonder what it could be.
I forgot as well. Did I actually put a question out for the Castaway one?
Don't know.
Okay.
Yes, you did.
It's the ball's name. Yeah. Okay, cool. That's okay. Yeah. Fuck. And finally, Richer Sounds will come along, and they've got some JBL Tune 500 Bluetooth headphones. Let's say, who's the best live band you've ever seen?
We've never thrown that out there.
Yeah. Wow. Who would yours be, Ben?
Oh, that's a great question. Rob Zombie's incredible live.
That was so good at Download last year. One of the best ever.
Yeah.
Better than Corey?
I've never seen Corey live, so I couldn't possibly say.
No. What about you?
I really enjoyed Muse.
Oh.
When they did Black Holes and Revelation. I think it was the Harp Tour.
Yeah.
At Wembley. That was really good.
So fucking good.
Yeah.
It's a real tough one, isn't it, that?
It is. Part of me was hoping that there was going to be a prize that gave away the mask in Dead Man's Shoes.
Oh, that'd be really cool.
Want to terrorise your friends and neighbours?
That'd be awesome. So the best way to enter our competitions is to go on skiptheend.co.uk, because on there we've got Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, email, Pigeon, whatever way you want to get to
Pigeon.
Us, you just send it us and we'll announce the winners in 2 weeks' time.
I'm going to give them a super duper fucking dose. I'm going to send them to space, man.
It's now time for Movie Masturbate, the section of the show where we pick a name of a director out of the pot and we talk about our favourite film from that particular director. And on the last episode, oh my goodness me, we chose Alfred Hitchcock, one of the classic, most iconic directors of cinema history. And it's taken us this time to finally get around to him. And I'm sure we've got lots to choose from. But what did we all choose? Let's go to Ben, because I want to hear what you have to say. What's your favourite Hitchcock film?
Rear Window.
Wow!
Nice
yes!
choice.
Great choice.
It's the story of a housebound man played by James Stewart who passes the time by watching his neighbours through the window, and one night he believes he's witnessed the aftermath of a murder. It's an incredible film, and one of the things that I love about Hitchcock, not just this film, but all of his films, he would always let his films breathe. He likes to build the atmosphere and develop the characters rather than just jumping straight into the action. And this is a perfect example of it. The plot doesn't kick in until after the 30-minute mark. The first half an hour is spent getting to know Jimmy Stewart's character and his relationship with his girlfriend, played by Grace Kelly, so that we understand them as people. And therefore, when the plot kicks in, we understand why they're reacting the way they're reacting, because we know them. And I like that. He's given us that time to develop them before we see how they react to things. He was a very, very smart director. And speaking of Jimmy Stewart and Grace Kelly, they're incredible in this film. Have you guys seen this film?
Yes, oh, absolutely. Amazing.
Stewart is he's the consummate everyman, and I love in this film how he goes from being essentially just a bored guy, because he can't move because he's got a broken leg, but he goes from boredom into obsession and paranoia. But Grace Kelly, for me, absolutely steals the film. She is mesmerising as his girlfriend, especially when you think she's going to be the typical movie girlfriend who's a shrew and just, you know, disagrees with what he says. But when he says, you know, I think there's been a murder, she's like, yep, I'm with you. And she's in on his spot, you know, she's helping him try and discover this. She's supporting him all the way. She's so amazing in this film. And for a thriller about murder and voyeurism, it's surprisingly funny. There are a lot of laugh-out-loud moments in this film. And of course, we have to talk about the direction. The direction from the great man is flawless. We constantly view the neighbour's apartments through Jimmy Stewart's window, and it's always his point of view, and the camera movements are so graceful from one apartment to the next. The way that that apartment block across the way is set up, it reminds me of, you know, a doll's house when the front is off of it, the front of it, so you can see all the different rooms. That's what this is like when you're watching all those different apartments. It's absolutely amazing. And did you know that the courtyard between Stewart's apartment and then all of those other apartments, that's a set?
No.
Of that, at the time when Paramount made this film, it was the biggest indoor set that had ever been made.
Oh my goodness.
It looked you would just think it was a real apartment block.
Yeah.
But it's all a set. It's absolutely amazing.
I love how he characterises the neighbours.
Mm-hmm.
When he's at the misfitness.
Yeah.
When she's doing a star jumps and her press ups in the window. And I just love how it's his take, like you said. It's not sort of them as characters, as themselves, but it's how he portrays them. I think it's marvellous. Mm-hmm.
You know, you're talking then about like the dollhouse effect and the way that the front of it's off, and that's what inspired it, and you just get that idea. Mm-hmm. Weirdly, that's what inspired Neil Buchanan on... Did you ever watch the TV show Finders Keepers?
Yeah. Of course.
Didn't when they, the like, parents went away.
Mess up their rooms to find like keys or what have you.
Find the prizes.
Friggin' love that show.
That was inspired by this film.
By Rear Window.
That's what it's all about.
Got a bit dark after nine when a murder actually happens, and then the kids got to find out who did it.
Me too. That was an incredible show.
And I'd scream like, it's in the bedside cabinet, you little shit.
But to get the opportunity to mess up a room and then not have to worry about cleaning it up.
It's amazing.
Heaven.
Absolutely brilliant. Just going to the toilet. Where is it? It's in the shower. Like, oh, it's that and Fun House.
Yeah.
Yeah, whole lot of fun. Prizes to be won.
Prizes to be won.
It's a real wacky show where anything goes.
I would love that. And I always wanted to go on the go-karts.
Yeah.
And have a go on those twins.
Oh, no. Nope. Nope.
Yeah. But it was a good show. But yeah.
You know what?
Hitchcock, I'm pretty sure we were talking about Hitchcock at one point.
From Hitchcock to Neil Buchanan.
I would say moving swiftly on, but I've got to go to Mark.
Yeah. Art Attack as well.
Yeah,
so when they panned out, oh man. Puts those of towels down and hoodies and t-shirts and stuff, pans out and it's like a fucking castle.
Like Mona Lisa.
So good.
All right, once on Art Attack, they did this thing where Neil Buchanan showed you how to make a document look old. So you'd basically tear up the paper and then use a tea bag to stain it brown so it looked old.
That's right.
And I used that because I scanned in my birth certificate and I altered it to make myself look older, and then I printed it off and then I stained it with tea.
Oh my God.
Which I then used to buy booze underage.
That's awesome.
This is an Art Attack.
Did you burn around the sides as well?
I just sort of tore it a little bit and then you fold it a lot
like
so it seems really old. Yeah, and it worked, man.
I reckon each week now we've been off Movie Masturbate and we talk about things from game shows that we can use to get further in life. That's amazing, man.
Wow.
Tea bags. Tea bags get you beer. That's what it's all about.
Don't want to know what teabagging will get you. Mark, you'll go. That's
right then. So mine is the film that influenced Birdemic, The Birds.
Ooh.
The original Birdemic, they say. This film's a really
they
simple.
They do say that.
Some people say yeah. it.
It's a real simple storyline. A town is attacked by a lot of birds.
Yeah.
And also, The Birds has the same storyline as Birdemic. It's really, really good. Nature turns on humanity. But for me, this was a shocker that no one had seen. This film's 1963. We take all these films now as horrors. As, oh, yeah, it's just another mm-hmm. one. This was one of the ones that started it.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine people in the 60s going in, not being prepared for this, after the sort of films he'd released, and having this tension created on screen that's just complete doom.
Yeah.
This whole town is attacked by these horrible birds. It's horrible. They come, they attack, they leave. That's it. That's my plan of action
when I was in my teens.
Oh, God. You arrived, you came, and you left. Ugh, that's grim.
Had a rough childhood.
Jesus. Right then. So moving swiftly on. What makes this film so powerful? Obviously, the directing is absolutely amazing.
Yeah.
He's a genius. But was the fact that most of the film is silent. So, if you haven't got that... you got in Birdemic, which I think it needed. But there's all these different settings, and it sounds ridiculous, but they then use silence in different ways. So even though it's just silence, the way it's used and the way it's filmed gives a different kind of atmosphere and a different fear. It's fucking horrible.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the way she walks out of her house and it's all in her hair and she's getting all attacked. It's genuinely not nice. I think those people in the cinemas at those times when, like, The Exorcist came out, were coming out screaming.
Mm.
Loads of people were shooting birds randomly in the street because you'd come out, you'd be scared. If you're walking outside the cinema, you just gone to The View, watched it for the first time in the 60s, walk out and you're like, oh my God, look, there's a fucking sparrow looking at me. You would kick it or fucking run. You would. You wouldn't
no.
be like, oh, I've just seen a... I know how this is going to end. They're going to go for my eyes and start chewing and you'd be fucking furious.
Not once have I had the urge to kick a sparrow. Not once.
Like, what about a crow?
Yeah, definitely them, yeah.
Or drop kick a robin.
Or an emu.
Can't fly. Never mind.
Do you remember that
emu? Oh my...
But genuinely, Rod Hull. Always used to go for the kids' crotches.
Yeah.
It's true. I'm telling you.
There's a really cool sequence when it alludes to the fact that it doesn't matter how old or how young you are, or if you're a guy or a girl or a kid, those birds will get you. And that's illustrated in the school scene.
Yeah.
The kids are singing a school in their building, and then you see one bird just on the climbing frame, and then that multiplies to 10 birds, to 20 birds, and then the whole playground is just covered with them. And then as the kids come out of the school, the birds just swoop in and attack. It's masterful, because I don't think anything like that had been done previously in cinema. It was always adults that were kind of susceptible to doom and danger. But in this film, anything went.
Have you ever seen any of the behind-the-scenes footage or photos of this?
Yes, yeah. I have.
Where basically they've just got like birds on a stick and they're just poking people with this
Oh, what?
Bird
they're
stick.
Not real birds.
Although, saying that, there's a scene towards the end of the film with Tippi Hedren where she goes into the attic and she's being attacked by birds, like being pecked in her face. She nearly lost an eye on set because Alfred Hitchcock demanded the scene be done again and again.
Mm-hmm.
Truth be told, he was a bit of an arsehole, apparently, behind the scenes, and he had a bit of an obsession with Tippi. So therefore, she nearly lost her eye due to his obsession with her, that she was so beautiful.
Did he nearly tip her over the edge?
Oh, good God.
Oh,
no. Social media. Oh, no, sorry, Gemma's got a choice. Yeah. Sorry.
Hi. Yeah. Hi, how you doing?
How you doing?
How you doing? I could have gone for any film.
And no, you couldn't. Only ones by him.
I know. You didn't let me finish my sentence. Any film by Hitchcock. But I, of course, went for the one that started it all with my love affair of him. It's Psycho.
Nice.
It was the film that introduced me to the world of Hitchcock. And it really could have been a different film any other day, because my choices vary from time to time. But I find myself having so much fondness for this film because it is so iconic. You know, it starts as a mystery thriller with Janet Leigh as Marion Crane embezzling money from a boss and having an affair with a married man. But as soon as she makes a pit stop at the Bates Motel, the switcheroo comes. It's no longer a thriller. It's a horror. And then it just, you don't know where to go, because a big star like Janet Leigh at the time of 1960, she was the golden girl. She was everywhere. She was so famous. And to kill her off at what, 40-minute mark, was big news, and people couldn't quite believe it was actually happening. It gave people fear of showering with a shower curtain. It did for that what Jaws did for swimming in the water. And having a score with just high-pitched violin noises is still recognisable to this day bearing in mind this was at the beginning of the 60s, it's such a legendary film that I believe in about 50 years, 100 years' time, people will still be talking about Psycho. It's so simple. It's so effective. It's blood-curdling. It's creepy. And with Gregory Peck at the helm as Norman Bates, he was the perfect mummy's boy. Mm-hmm. That kind of resonated with the underlying just horrific effect of what he really was. It is just such a masterful stroke of a film, and I think it's a film that I will never tire of and people should watch.
It's a great film, and again, it's the same sort of thing with Rear Window, where the story doesn't really kick in for like half an hour.
Exactly.
All the stuff with Janet Leigh and the embezzling and all that kind of stuff. She doesn't get to the Bates Motel until 20, 30 minutes in. It's the same thing. You just get to know the character and the atmosphere of the film before the actual plot machinations kick in.
Mm-hmm. I thought Vince Vaughn was absolutely sensational from start to finish.
Gus Van Sant does not rhyme with Alfred Hitchcock.
Fucking brilliant. You're always going to pick this.
Always.
There's never any doubt.
Yeah, I did watch films like The Birds. I watched Rear Window. I watched Rope, Frenzy, Rebecca. Mm-hmm. But there's so much good films to choose from in his back catalogue. But for me, it was always going to be Psycho.
Nice. Let's go to social media because there's a hell of a lot that came through.
Oh yeah, plenty. On Twitter, Thomas at Simi41 has agreed with Gemma, says, has to be Psycho for me. Even knowing the twists, it's still full of suspense. A legitimate masterpiece.
Heck yes.
On Facebook, Emily Mecca, my current go-to is The Trouble with Harry, a good reminder of how funny Hitchcock films can be. I haven't seen that one.
It's great.
No, I've never seen
good,
it.
Yeah. It is good.
On Twitter, sportsfan at sports_fan said, I'm going for The 39 Steps, a cracking spy mystery.
Brilliant.
I haven't seen the first 38.
Not bad.
I'm going to go home.
On Facebook, Steve Bruin agrees with me. Rear Window, definitely. Cinematic perfection. You're not wrong. On Twitter, Mook Holden at Mr. Babamook has said, definitely Rope.
Yes.
From its direction, acting, script and character study, it's exceptional in every way.
You mentioned about how things don't happen later on in a story. With Rope, you see the murder straight away and it just kind of, bam, you're in there. So it's almost like a reverse Hitchcock.
Yeah, yeah.
Fair play.
On Instagram, Emily Mason, a.k.a. Emily H. Mason, has said, Shadow of a Doubt, an ominous slow burn of a thriller.
Ooh, I've not seen that one.
I don't think I am either. Yeah.
There's a lot of work he's done I've never got around to.
Definitely. On Twitter, Sharon Lloyd-Johnson, at ShazLJ, has said, Dial M for Murder, such a clever movie and for the most part set in just one room. It is a very good film, and that's kind of what he did with Rear Window as well. Pretty much all of that film takes place in Stewart's apartment. Mm. Really good stuff. On Facebook, Richard Watts has said, North by Northwest, a stellar cast on top of their game, and it looks beautiful and it's expertly crafted.
Again, the scene with the field and the plane in the background is like, how can anyone replicate something like that?
I bought that on Blu-ray and it looks like it's filmed yesterday. It's one of the best transfers to ever buy from an old sort of film, but that film's brilliant.
It's fantastic, yeah. L Queen at Lorna Queen 86 agrees with Mark, The Birds. I was really impressed with Tippi Hedren's performance. It's a shame how Hitchcock treated her and indeed all of his actresses. So Gemma alluded to this earlier.
Yeah.
He was a bit of a slave driver when it came to his actresses.
Bit of a dickhead.
Mm-hmm. Got some good performances though.
Yeah.
So still bit of a dickhead.
Yeah. Not forgivable.
And then finally on Twitter, Stephen Adams at Stephen Adams 2 has said, Vertigo is just a bloody brilliant film.
Oh, Vertigo's wonderful.
I haven't seen that for years.
It's a great movie.
Oh, amazing.
Would you like some utterly unscientific analysis?
Yes.
Every single time.
Undoubtedly one of the most popular votes we've had. 16 of his films received votes, but two of them led the pack by quite a distance. It came down to Psycho versus Rear Window.
Ooh.
And the winner by just 3 votes was Rear Window.
Fair play.
Yeah, there was also a lot of love for Vertigo, The Birds and Rope, as you'd expect. Mm-hmm. I thought Strangers on a Train might get more love than it did. I think that only got maybe one vote. But other than that, there weren't any real snubs or surprises. All the big names you'd expect to be mentioned were.
Fantastic.
How are we going to top this, genuinely? Because this is like one of the biggest directors of our generation.
Mm-hmm. We still have a part.
Well, and it's Ben's turn to pick out.
Is it? Can I have a drum roll, please?
Of course.
Oh, Mark's going to love this.
Oh.
On the next episode, we're going to be masturbating over Cameron Crowe.
Oh.
Yes!
If I were you, I'd get in that fucking car and I'd get out of here, man. I'd gather them goonies and get whatever you've got and come with me. Because I'm going to fucking hit you all.
It's now time for the rewatch, and this time round it's Dead Man's Shoes. Set in a small, bleak Derbyshire town, after 7 years in the army, Richard returns to find what has happened to his beloved brother Anthony, who latched onto the local drugs cartel and became the butt of their cruelty due to his learning difficulty. As Richard begins to take revenge against this gang, the story of Anthony's life and fate unfolds through flashbacks and revelations. I wrote that this morning. Didn't you use IMDb
at all.
well done for saying revelations.
Yes. And as you heard at the start of today's episode, this is the first time for me, but obviously you've both seen it before.
Yes.
So let's just get straight to it. Ben, talk to me about Dead Man's Shoes.
Well, I want you to talk to me about it because you know Gemma and I love this film. So question number one for you, Mark, is did you clock on during the film that Anthony wasn't real? Did you realise at any point that Anthony...
What?
He still hasn't realised.
Did the Blair Witch conversation all over again.
Yeah. Did you at any point realise that Anthony was a figment of his imagination?
Yeah, because when obviously the scene where they go and visit him and he's against the wall and you see him in the background, I was thinking this seems a bit weird now. Mm-hmm. And then when I was looking further on, but... Do you want me to tell you what summarise this film in a few words? This is no bullshit. As I'm sitting here right now, it's probably made my top 10 films of all time.
Wow. Crikey. I knew he'd like it. I didn't know he'd like it that much.
No. I watched it last night.
Yeah.
I watched it this morning. And I started to watch it again before I left today.
Oh my goodness.
Shane Meadows is a fucking genius.
He is.
Absolutely.
And I can't believe I've waited this long for this film. I knew it was going to be good because everyone on Facebook and Twitter were like, oh, go, go. And I was getting comments from people saying, like, oh, Mark's going to love it. I didn't realise it was that good. Mm-hmm. Absolutely fucking incredible from start to finish. I've never seen anything like this before. It left me so emotionally drained, and it's phenomenal. Mm-hmm. Every single person, it's incredible, and it shows you can make good films with no budget. It's a masterpiece, genuinely.
It is. It's absolutely phenomenal, and I'm delighted you like it that much. And amazingly, there wasn't really a script when they started filming. They had essentially an outline to plot out all the story beats, but effectively a rough draft, but a lot of the dialogue was improvised, and I think you can tell that because it has a very real feeling to it, especially the interactions between the drug gang.
Yeah,
they seem like just idiots having real conversations. It doesn't seem scripted because it wasn't, and it just makes it feel more real. And it's a very dangerous game going into a film without a full script because it could fall on its arse.
Yeah,
but it really succeeds here.
Yeah, it's a gritty and hard to watch film, but it's done with such realism and honesty. By the time that the film ends, you need sort of time to gather your thoughts to process exactly what's happened, but you understand the motivation of Richard, played incredibly by Paddy Considine, because this really is his film.
Yeah, Considine's incredible in this film. The scene that gets me is the one near the end when he's confronting the last gangster, and they're in that room where Anthony died. And it's just brilliantly directed by Meadows. It's a real tight close-up, so you've got Considine's face just filling the screen, and just you see every emotion wash over him when he starts to realise that he's become a monster. Mm-hmm. Fucking phenomenal.
It's absolutely... 90-minute film, it feels like 10 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Every single person in the film is brilliant. Like, you just started talking about Tony Kebbell. I've never really rated him...
Toby.
It's Toby.
I've never really rated him as a great actor because I've never seen him in a lot. Mm-hmm. But to play someone with learning difficulties, I think, is quite challenging because you could be offensive, and you see films like The Ringer where they go over the board and make it too comical, don't you?
I like that film.
Yeah, but it is a good film. But then you think of, like, Something About Mary. It's very, very large in life. Mm-hmm. This is subtle. He does it all with just the smile and the way he kind of lets his teeth show more. Mm-hmm. But the way he talks is like a normal person. But now and then he's just quite simple, and you think, is he autistic? Is something not quite right? And he's always looking spaced out. And the way he's treated in those black and white scenes, the flashbacks are like up there with sort of American History X. And it's got that kind of grain on the way it's filmed and everything. Mm-hmm. Each time my heart was sinking, and then you see him being punched in the face and dragged around like a dog, having a lead on him, hit. And you're just like, he was starting to believe he was being accepted, and you were like, oh, this is cool. And they're just fucking with him because he's such an easy target, and it's soul-destroying.
Well, it is. And Toby Kebbell is incredible in this film, and it's crazy to think as well it was his screen debut.
Jesus.
Prior to this, all he'd been in was an episode of Peak Practice.
Wow. He was brilliant, man.
Absolutely amazing. He and Considine are superb. All of the gangsters were as well.
Yeah. I like them all.
Ben mentioned about how a lot of the script was improvised, and I think the chain-stoking scene
scene.
Yeah.
That kind of illustrates that a lot to me, because the gang of thugs are just talking about drugs. They're reading from pornographic magazines or jazz mags. And it's very clear that they have no aspirations to break out of their situation. They are very happy to be in the moment, smoke weed, have cocaine, read a load of jazz mags and just watch like daytime TV. They have no desire to really make something of themselves. And it's almost like the town of Derbyshire is this cell that they all live in. And the only way that they can really pass the time is by torturing poor Anthony, which subsequently leads to his death.
Bleak.
That is one word.
Yeah, that sounded like my uni days at one point, but yeah.
One of my favourite things about the film is the visual of the gangsters driving around in that crappy Citroen 2CV.
Incredible.
It's not exactly a gangster car, is it?
No.
And I also like when they're terrified of Richard's justice, so they're hunkering down in that building, and they've got the most poxy weapons you've ever seen. One of them's got like a ceremonial samurai
That's
sword.
It.
The other one has the smallest crossbow I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Just really shit weapons.
But of course, when Richard starts stalking them and he uses this terrifying gas mask.
Yeah. Mm.
And it kind of separates the character that we are introduced to as Richard into a full-on vigilante that's purely out for revenge and redemption against his brother's name. And even if he was, obviously he's a good guy in this, even if he was the bad guy, I was terrified looking at that mask, because there's nothing. It's soulless. It's almost like accepting that death is the only option in order to avenge his brother.
And I love when one of the gangsters is trying to explain to the leader of their crew what he'd seen. Yeah. And he keeps describing him as an elephant.
That's right, yeah.
So there was an elephant out. What are you talking about, elephant?
Yeah. We're coming to get you.
All the scenes where they're kind of confronted by him, it's terrifying. Like when he's up against the wall, which I mentioned earlier, and he goes up and says like, "Hiya, I'm Sonny." He goes to shake his hand. He doesn't even flinch. He just sits there with his arms behind his back and he just looks like, "I don't give a fuck."
Yeah.
And as he walks over, he goes, "Oh, there's a rumor. Yes, it was me."
Yeah.
And it just shuts him down and it's silent. He's like, "Okay, so what are you doing in my house?" He's like, "I wanted to walk up. I was by your throat and I thought I'm just going to slice it." And you're just like, "You don't fuck with this guy."
Yeah.
And then when he goes to threaten him, he does this movement with his neck, like, "Yeah, come on then."
Yeah.
And it's just amazing. I'm like, Paddy is one of the best actors ever. Just by that one movement, I'm like, shit, like, run.
The bit I love in that scene is when he's clearly not scared at all by the gangster and he points at his palm and goes, "You're there, mate."
You're
right there in the palm of my hand. I fucking love that.
So like, I suggest you and the Goonies get in that car and fuck
off.
Like, oh my god, it's so good.
He can change his demeanour like on a sixpence. There's that bit when I think it's one of the first scenes he's in, he's just sat there in that grim looking pub just keeping himself to himself, and the one of the gangsters says, "What are you looking at, what are you staring at?" And he just goes, "You cunt."
I know.
It's the way he snaps at him. It's fucking amazing,
and it's the whole room goes silent because he's like, "You alright, mate?"
But how about when he starts picking them off one by one? And he doesn't do it in the most discreet manners either. I think the first guy where he had knob spray painted on his jacket, he pretty much with a target pretty much gets his head caved in, although we don't see the actual murder happening. But the other murders, when he picks them apart one by one, when they're off their tits off of drugs,
that's horrible, that scene. My anxiety was like this. I was shaking like, fucking hell, this scene's lasting too long.
But they don't even have control of themselves, and they kind of allow it to happen. Even when one of them stuffed in a suitcase and he presents it to the other guy, and he just turns into this blubbering wet blanket of a mess, and you think, I might take mercy on him, he's given him a hug. In goes the switchblade, dead.
But before
Good night.
The way he's making that guy stand there and he's like just weighing him up, like now he's going to punch him and kill him.
Didn't he say something like, "Okay, well, good night," or something?
Yeah, and you think this, it goes on too long. Shane Meadows leaves that, so your heart's racing. And the way he just clips him, and then you see his face explode as he falls on the sofa.
Yeah, it hits him with that upward palm strike, and it's only for a fraction of a second do you see his face afterwards, but it's a mess. It's
horrible.
Caved in,
But it's almost that. You know, violence, does violence solve anything? And I think in the case of Anthony being absolutely decimated by those guys, you know it's deserved.
Yeah.
They couldn't have had any other justice. Them being caught by the police and being sentenced to prison wasn't ever enough. They had to go out in the most violent and unrepentant circumstances.
And it plays in perfectly to our topic earlier today of top three comeuppances.
Yeah.
They got what they deserved for what they did to Anthony.
But even towards the end, he showed mercy on the one that didn't do anything. He didn't lay a finger on him. He didn't put the rope around Anthony's neck. He didn't spit at him. Even when we look at the flashback, he looks conflicted. He looks like he's in absolute turmoil because he has the opportunity to stop all of this. But instead, he goes along with the gang.
it was a very interesting choice to give that man mercy, but at the same time you understood why, because he was becoming exactly what those gang of thugs were.
Yeah, he says it himself, doesn't he? He says that he's the monster.
Yeah.
I love it when he visits his house and he tells his wife and the kids back and then he realises who it is. It's like, he said he's Anthony's brother and you watch him and his missus is like, what? And it's like, oh, fuck.
The whole story, it's not even spoken. No. You see it in a flashback and that's the emotional punch that this film gives you.
Mm-hmm. It's incredible. Shane Meadows, as Mark said at the start of this, is fantastic. Yeah. He's a bit of a genius. I love the fact that he films and sets his movies in and around the Midlands, especially the East Midlands.
Yeah.
Because, and maybe I'm biased because I'm an East Midlander, but it seems like a very underrepresented part of the country when it comes to film. Films set in Britain are usually in London or sometimes Birmingham, sometimes Manchester. You don't really usually see films set in Matlock.
Yeah.
No, and I like that he's, you know, keeping it.
We can go to Derby and visit all of the sets from this film, which is pretty cool.
Because he's responsible for Once Upon a Time in the Midlands. Yeah. Along with the series of This Is England, just the film and the TV series, which is in itself the best of British in terms of TV and film work.
He's an absolute genius.
He is. Brilliant. Yeah. He's incredible.
I'm excited to see what he does next. I think he's doing more TV, I think. But
I think for me, it's him and Ben Wheatley are the two the two best sort of innovative British directors out there working.
Agreed.
Yeah, I can't think of anyone else.
They're
untouchable.
They are untouchable.
Do you know what? I've really enjoyed this and I can't wait to watch it. I can't believe it's taken me this long. But I reckon at this point, let's score this one. So okay. Ben, you started.
I'm going to give it a 9. I think it's just a fantastic film.
Wow. Gemma?
A 9. It's a film that isn't a repeat watch, but when you do watch it, my God, it leaves a mark on you.
It's my favourite revenge film now. It's my favourite British film. It's honestly absolutely fucking amazing. It's a 10.
Wow.
Easily. Absolutely unbelievable.
Cool.
From start to finish. But I still think that gives a overall 9 out of 10.
Lovely.
Whose rewatch choice is it next?
It's my choice.
See how we're acting so well. Oh, who is it? Is it not you, Ben? Oh, no.
No.
It's got to be Gemma then.
I don't even have a pick in front of me right now. Whatever could it be? Guys, on the next episode, I think it's about time we were with the law. We were with the boys in blue, the Rozzers, the Fuzz. On the next episode, our rewatch is Hot Fuzz!
Hey, yes!
Time for our new game. And the name of the game is Who Dares Wins.
Oh.
Now, you might be thinking, isn't Who Dares Wins the name of a BBC game show presented by Nick Knowles off DIY SOS? And you'd be right, it is.
Okay.
However, I've spelt it with a Z.
Oh!
So it's Who Dares Wins.
You're so hip!
So it's different, yeah? It's different. Don't sue me, right?
Wow.
That being said, the game is in fact a rip-off. Sorry, I mean homage to Who Dares Wins, the BBC game show presented by Nick Knowles off DIY SOS.
Nice.
So here's how it works. I'm going to give you a movie-related list to which there are 10 correct responses. You then are going to play against one another and you have to take it in turns to bid on how many of the responses you think you can get in 90 seconds.
Fucking hell.
But you then have the ability to outbid one another. So let's say I give you the topic and I say, Gemma, how many do you think you're going to get? And Gemma says 4. You, Mark, could then say, well, I think I'm going to get 5. Gemma could then outbid you again and say, I'm going to get 6. Or at any point you can say, I don't think I can beat that, so you've got to play. You can then make the other person go.
Fucking hell.
And here's the rub, though. If, let's say, you say I can get 4, and you do get 4 in 90 seconds, you get 4 points.
Right.
If you say I'm going to get 4 and you don't get 4, your opponent gets the 4 points.
Oh.
So you've got to be very, very savvy.
I've lost. Fucking hell.
I've got 5 lists, which means there are potentially 50 points to
Jesus.
Play for.
Oh, bring it on.
Does everybody understand the game?
Yes.
Does it make sense?
I do, but it sounds hard.
Okay. So the first list is the all-time top 10 highest grossing movies worldwide. The all-time top 10 highest grossing movies worldwide. Gemma, I'm going to let you have the first bid. How many of the 10 do you think you can get in 90 seconds?
I think I could go for 4. 4, Ben.
Starting quite low, Gemma. Mark,
my answer's 4.
Do you want to make Gemma play or are you going to outbid her?
I reckon I can get 5.
Yeah. Ooh, Mark's saying 5. Gemma, are you going to let him play or are you going to outbid him?
Mark, the stage is yours.
Okay.
Fuck.
So, Mark, your topic, your list, the all-time top 10 highest grossing films worldwide, and your time starts now.
Endgame.
Yes, Avengers Endgame, correct.
Titanic.
Yes.
Dark Knight?
No.
Oh, what? Avatar.
Yes. So that's three you've got so far.
Okay, so I need two more.
Yeah, you've got a minute and 15 seconds.
Right, give me a bit of time now. Right, what's took shitloads of money?
I think you could do this. I do think you can do it.
Oh, he's shit in the bed.
The Infinity War.
Correct.
The Infinity One more. War.
Okay.
You can do this. This is easy.
55 seconds.
Oh, shit. One more. Come on. Fucking hell. Let's go for another Marvel film that did really well. Something like Iron Man?
No.
Oh.
Toy Story?
No.
Oh, my goodness me.
45 seconds.
Fuck, okay, this is pressure. It's good for the listeners. I'm doing it all on purpose.
Here's a hint. Kevin Smith ain't going to be on that list.
Gone with the Wind?
No.
Oh, my goodness.
Although that is the number one when adjusted for inflation. Cool. This is the non-inflation adjusted list. No.
Oh, shit, I'm not going to do it.
25 seconds.
I think you can. I think you're going to pull it out of the bag.
Star Wars, episode 7.
Which is?
Whatever it's called. Brilliant. Episode 7.
The Force Awakens.
Yes.
Yeah, that's in there. You've done
yes!
it. Well done, Mark. Well done. And you did it with 11 seconds
yes!
to spare.
I told you.
So nice. That is 5 points to Mark.
Well done.
Fucking hell.
That was pressured.
Yeah. What was the other five on the list?
The other five on the list were Jurassic World.
Oh, what?
The Lion King, the 2019 version.
What?
That's even mentaler.
I mean, that's still out and it's busted into the list already.
Jesus.
The Avengers, the first one.
Oh. Shit.
Fast and Furious 7.
That's a load of bollocks.
Oh, it's because when he died.
And Avengers Age of Ultron.
Oh, I should have said all the Avengers films.
You actually got the top five.
So well
really done. Well there. Yeah,
do I get
well
bonus
done.
Points?
No.
No.
Fuck.
Our second list, and Gemma, this time, because you're behind, I'm going to let you make the first bid again.
Ah, danke schön.
Our second list, the top 10 highest paid actors of 2019. And here's a hint, they're all men. The top 10 highest paid actors of 2019. Gemma, how many can you get?
I'm going to go for 6.
Ooh, bloody hell. Mark, are you going to make a play or are you going to outbid?
I'm going to make a play.
Yeah, I think
damn
that's
it.
A good plan.
Yes, that's a lot.
So, Gemma, you've got 90 seconds to name 6 of the top 10 highest paid actors of 2019.
Okay.
And your time starts now.
Robert Downey Jr.
Yes.
Leonardo DiCaprio.
No.
Oh, Matt Damon.
No.
Tits. who's in Avengers? Chris Evans.
Yes.
Ah. Mark Ruffalo.
No.
Chris Hemsworth.
Yes.
Oh.
That's three down, Gemma.
Marvel's bank balance.
Yeah. Okay, so this is where I stumble a little bit, so I'm just going to name some random actors. John Hamm?
No.
Matt Damon, I've already said him. No. Ben Affleck?
No.
Brad Pitt?
No.
What?
He didn't do many films last year.
One what? Minute to go.
Okay. Oh, God. No, Jude Law ain't in that.
No.
Okay. Al Pacino. Robert De Niro.
No.
Yeah, for the bread advert. They gave him a fucking loaf.
45 seconds.
Sylvester Stallone.
No.
Michael B. Jordan.
No.
Chadwick Boseman.
No.
Who was in... Jeremy Renner.
No.
Josh Brolin.
No.
Oh, what? He's done loads.
Chris Pratt.
No.
Wow.
Kurt Russell.
No.
Oh dear.
30 seconds.
This is going well, isn't it? You only need three more.
It's all right. I'm just going to name legs and just see where it gets me. I don't know. Dunkachino, Al Pacino.
No, 20 seconds.
Okay. Oh my God. Emil Hirsch?
No. Yeah.
Harrison Ford, Ryan Gosling.
No, no.
Tits, Ryan Reynolds?
No.
Very what? Close, though. I bet he's up there.
5 seconds.
Come on, you only got to get three.
Steve Carell.
No.
Will Ferrell.
No.
Zach Galifianakis.
No.
Time's up.
And your time is up.
Yeah. Zach, they gave all the money to.
You know.
Fuck it.
So, Gemma, you said you were going to get 6.
I did. I took a big game.
And you got 3.
Yes.
Which means the 6 points go to Marky Mark.
Well, boom. It's hard, isn't it?
Yeah.
Really fucking hard.
Jeez, you're welcome, by the way.
That's good work.
Would you like to know the rest of the list?
No, but yeah, go on.
Number one with a bullet, you should have got this one, Dwayne The Rock Johnson.
Yeah.
Overrated.
Then there was Akshay Kumar, who is a Bollywood actor, I believe.
Oh.
You could have also have had Jackie Chan.
Oh.
Amazing.
I thought Statham might be there.
No. Bradley Cooper.
Oh, yeah.
Adam Sandler, Paul Rudd, or Will Smith.
Adam Sandler, of course.
Because of his Netflix deal.
Yeah, exactly.
He's making a mint off that.
He got like 8 film deal or something.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think mm-hmm. He's done about 4 already.
Oh, too many.
Four too many.
He's going to get an Oscar at the end of the year. You never know.
I hope he gets the nomination at least.
So
it would be insane, wouldn't it?
God,
okay.
This is tough.
Mark,
is
you're
it?
Absolutely pissing it. You've scored 11 so far. Gemma's got zip. But there are still 30 potential points to play for, so it ain't all over.
Okay.
Your third list, and again, Gemma, because you're behind, I'm going to let you have the first
Thanks.
Punt. The last 10 films by the highest paid actor, Dwayne The Rock Johnson. What are the last 10 films that Dwayne Johnson has appeared in? How many do you think you can get, Gem?
I think I can get 5.
Gem's going 5. You're going to make a play or you're going to have a bid, Mark?
I'm going to make a play.
Yeah?
Tits.
You'll get them easy.
Okay.
Right. I should have played, actually. Fucking hell.
No, you've made your bed now.
Now sleep in it.
Gemma, you have 90 seconds to name 5 of the last 10 films Dwayne The Rock Johnson has appeared in, and your time starts now.
Jumanji.
Yes.
Hobbs and Shaw.
Yes.
Central Intelligence.
Yes.
Wank.
Fast and Furious 7.
No.
Oh, Fast and Furious 8.
Yes. Only need one more, Gem. You've got 1 minute and 10 seconds.
Oh my God, the pressure. What was he in? He's been in loads.
He's in
of
everything.
Films.
It's what
I
he
know.
Isn't in.
Welcome to the Jungle?
No.
The Other Guys?
No.
The Other Guys?
Yeah. He is in that, but is that's he? Not one of his last 10. Yeah.
Terrible no. film.
No, I love that film.
Really?
Yeah. Mark Wahlberg and.
Sorry. Oh, no. Moana!
Moana, Gemma, she's done
Whoa!
It. Boom. And you had 50 seconds left to play as well, Gemma. Very well done.
Oh my God, the sweat!
I was thinking of the one with Ryan Gosling in, Something Guys.
Oh,
the Nice Guy.
Yeah,
nice
I was thinking
guys.
Of that one.
No, he's not in that. Yeah. So, Gemma, you got 5 points there. Well done.
Huzzah.
The other ones you could have had, Fighting With My Family, Skyscraper, Rampage, Baywatch, or Gem and the Holograms.
Of course, Gem and the Holograms. Mm-hmm. The tip of my tongue.
Wank.
Okay, so the scores as we stand are Gemma on 5 and Mark on 11. So it's getting pretty close now. Even though Gemma's behind, I'm going to let you have the first point.
Oh, wow!
That's kind.
Our next list, and this is the toughest one, I will say. It's the last 10 women to win an acting Oscar. So that could be lead actress or supporting actress. The last 10 women to win an acting Oscar. Mark, how many do you think you're going to get?
4.
Ooh, quite low, Gemma.
5.
Ooh, Mark, are you going to outbid?
It's tough, isn't it? Because mm-hmm. I've thrown a lot of points away. Mm-hmm. God, for the listeners out there, shall I? Can I match it? We'll both play.
No.
Come on,
no.
Outbid me. Come on, outbid me.
No, you can have it.
No, go on, outbid me.
No, you can have it.
Do it.
5.
So, Gemma, you said you're going to get 5, is that right?
She will. She's good.
So, Gemma has got to name 5 of the last 10 women to win an acting Oscar, either in lead or supporting, and your 90 seconds start now.
Viola Davis.
Yes.
Lupita Nyong'o.
No.
Oh, Brie Larson.
Yes.
Kate Winslet.
No.
Oh, tits. Meryl Streep.
No.
Oh, my Lord.
She should win everything every year.
Last 10 years.
Well, it's the last 5 years, because don't forget there are 2 categories in
each
year.
Oh, crumbs if I love tits. Okay. Who won last year?
I'm not saying, because...
Well, don't help
it. Octavia Spencer?
No.
Monique?
No. You've got 55 seconds left and you've only got 2.
Oh, no.
I think she'll do it when she stops and thinks about it.
I'm
not going
to
help her at all either, because this is all about the points.
45 seconds.
And if you get this, it's going to be very close.
Oh my goodness.
And
then
be 1 point in
Jennifer
it.
Jennifer Lawrence.
No.
Did she not win? That's mad.
She's won, but not in the last 5 years.
Mad, yeah. I just always imagine her in that annoying red dress. Ask, thank you. Fuck off. Stop making films.
What films were out?
30 seconds.
Oh my goodness me, what films were out?
I said this was the toughest one.
It is the toughest one.
It is really tough.
Why do I talk a big game? Just shut your mouth, Jem.
20 seconds.
It's tough.
Oh God.
You've only got 3 to get. Okay. 1 every 6 seconds you're in. Come on, you can do this.
I can do it.
Bam. Come on, bam.
Scarlett Johansson?
No.
She's never won an Oscar.
10 seconds.
Oh. She never will.
Should we just count down the clock?
7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, and your time is up.
That was hard.
Out of interest, Mark, could you have got any of them?
Natalie Portman?
No.
Okay, what's her name? thingy from Fargo and stuff, McDormand or whatever.
Yes, Frances McDormand. Yeah,
she was
that
really
one.
Good.
Mm-hmm.
And who else would I have had? That's it. I don't think I
The other ones you could have had were Olivia Colman.
Oh, my God!
Emma Stone?
Yes, Emma Stone.
Yes, La La Land.
Regina King, Alison Janney, Alicia Vikander, Julianne Moore, or Patricia Arquette.
Julianne Moore.
That's disappointing.
So the 5 points, I'm afraid, go to Mark.
That's right.
that puts Mark on 16.
Wow.
And Gemma's on 5. Now we're on to our last list. So okay. Gemma, even if you were to get 10 out of 10, you'd only get 15 points.
All right, so taking part.
So Mark has already won this
well
one.
Done.
Wow.
Well done.
But our final list for a bit of fun. The last 10 James Bond movies. Mark, I'm going to let you have the first bid. How many of the last 10 James Bond movies do you think you can get?
4.
Ooh, again, low. Gemma, can you outbid him?
I can.
I'm really shit.
5.
5. Wow. Can you outbid Gemma?
Come on.
I think
the
you
listeners,
should.
6.
Yeah.
Oh,
Fuck it.
Go on. Take it away, Mark. Take it away.
Mark is going to go for 6.
I don't know. I genuinely don't know.
So you now need to give me 6 of the last 10 James Bond films, and your 90-second start now.
GoldenEye.
Yes.
Live and Let Die.
No.
Ah! Moonraker.
No, that's how old is that?
Okay, Spectre.
Yes.
Now I'm going to struggle. I really am, honestly.
Think of the themes.
Don't help him.
Sorry.
Live and Let Die.
No.
Was that not? Oh, Jesus.
I literally had this conversation 10 seconds ago.
I know.
1 minute and 5 seconds.
Oh, fuck. Right.
Think of the most recent ones.
I know,
ones.
I'm trying to
think of the Daniel Craig ones.
That's what I'm trying to think of. Casino Royale.
Yes.
What about the original Casino Royale in 1950 no. something like that?
The last 10.
Yeah. What's
50
the one
seconds.
That Madonna did the theme tune for?
I know it. I can't tell you, though.
I don't know if that was real. What's the one that Chris Cornell did the theme tune for?
Yeah.
You said
40
it
seconds.
Already. You said that one already.
Shit.
Don't worry.
So I've got 3, have I?
Yep.
You got 3, well done.
Okay, I need 3 more to go. Come mm-hmm. on. You Only Live Twice?
No.
Diamonds Are Forever?
No.
Stop getting Bond wrong!
Carry On Bond. Bond Academy 6. Fuck, I don't know what the last one was called.
15 seconds.
That's a real shit bomb when we reviewed. It was really bad. I don't know, dude.
Five seconds.
Shit, I've lost 6 points, but I've still won.
It doesn't matter, does it?
Do-do-do.
And your time is up. So the points go to Gemma, but Gemma, out of interest, because you have got any more of them, do you think?
Quantum of Solace.
Yeah.
Die Another Day.
Yeah.
The World Is Not Enough.
Yeah.
Tomorrow Never Dies.
Yeah.
And Spectre.
We had Spectre. Mark got that one, yeah.
All right.
What's the most recent one?
Oh, Skyfall.
Is that
Skyfall?
What it was?
Well, yeah. Spectre's the most recent one, isn't it? Yeah. Could have had Skyfall. You also could have had License to Kill and The Living Daylights.
Oh.
So the 6 points go to Gemma, but that means Gemma finishes on 11 points. Mark, the runaway winner, with 16.
Wow.
Well done,
that's
Mark.
A lot of prep for a game show.
Yeah.
When it gets to whoever's... Oh, can I go next?
Yeah.
Can I go next? Yes. Winner gets to go next. Fucking brilliant.
Damn
so
it.
Stay tuned. In 2 weeks, we will have round 2 of Who Dares Wins. It's time for Skip to the Recommend, that point in the show where we bring you our pop culture recommendations of the week. It could be something old, it could be something new, but it's something we're enjoying right now, and we want you to enjoy it too. Simple as that. I'm going to throw this out to you first, Gemma. There's a lot of hot content in the world at the minute.
Yes.
What have you picked?
A hot pick that I have decided on going is based on the first episode of a new season. So it's a very risky one, but I friggin' love this. It's American Horror Story 1984.
Ooh.
Ooh, I've heard great things.
It is currently 100% fresh off of Rotten Tomatoes, but no one really gives a monkeys about that anymore. But like I said, this is based on the very first episode of the new season. However, it's already left me wanting more, and I look forward to the season ahead. So it's in its 9th season. And of course, American Horror Story has covered a wide range of themes already in the past. We've seen a murder house, we've seen an asylum, a coven of witches, hell, we've even seen the apocalypse. But this time around, they've set the scene in the 80s, and the setting is at a reopened Camp Redwood. So following on from events of a bloody massacre years and years earlier, the camp has opened its doors to a gang of youngsters ready to party their summer away as camp counsellors. And these include the likes of Emma Roberts, Billy Lord, Cody Fearn, Angelica Ross, and Matthew Morrison, who has taken a massive step away from Glee and is currently sporting the world's greatest tash and the world's biggest schlong in a short. I hate myself. But in the first episode, the homages to 80s pop culture movies is already very, very high. So we have homages to Friday the 13th, we've got Halloween, even Body Heat and Staying Alive, and it looks glorious. The first episode firmly has its tongue in its cheek and it is winking at the audience saying, we know you guys are already recognising the references and we're going to go along with it. So it's already enjoyable. It's camp. It's brilliant. It's so much fun. But also the camera work is really, really impressive on the first episode. Clearly influenced, like I said, by the likes of Friday the 13th and Halloween. The camera work is unlike anything I've seen in American Horror Story. They're using handheld work. So they're going right up to the faces of the actors. They're making it very claustrophobic. Mm-hmm. But of course, referencing all of those 80s slasher films that this is obviously inspired by. And the performance of the actors are fantastic. And I have to say, especially Cody Fearn, who plays Xander, who's kind of this is he straight, is he gay, but he is over camping the whole role. So he's in on the joke with the audience going, this is clearly a ripoff. But what intrigues me the most about this show already, they've already published the first five synopsis of the first five episodes. There's going to be a mid-season break and, of course, come back with the rest of the episodes for the season. Everybody is already saying, are they going to do a twist like we've already seen in Roanoke and in Apocalypse, where the narrative, the story takes a completely different direction? And I'm incredibly excited because rumours are saying, well, it's going to be a film within a TV show. So essentially the actors are going to be playing two roles, or it's going to be along the lines of Cabin in the Woods. Whatever it is, I am super excited about it because I'm already digging it. And the killer, Mr. Jingles, the most terrifying name. When you hear Mr. Jingles, you think of the mouse in The Green Mile, but this one is plural, so it makes him... No, singular, sorry, because he's Mr. Jingle, so it makes him even more dangerous. But I'm here for it. I think it is absolutely fantastic. Please watch it. It's currently on Fox, 10 o'clock on Thursdays in the UK. I'm sure in America it's a little bit of a different time, but it's very, very enjoyable.
I have never seen an episode of American Horror Story, and I hear that it kind of varies wildly in quality. Some scenes are great, some not so great.
Yeah.
Is it, you know, I think you guys have both watched it, haven't you?
I've never seen
it. Have you not?
No.
I thought you had.
Everyone raved about it. Yeah. Was it Lady Gaga was in it?
See, I didn't like that one. Oh. That's Hotel. She was in Hotel.
So
and
many
in a
different
couple
ones.
Of, yeah.
I'm like, what?
The good ones are things like, for me, in my opinion, Murder House, Asylum, Roanoke. Roanoke, I think, is one of the strongest one, and one with the first ever plot twist within the mid-season. Mm-hmm. But then for every Roanoke and Asylum and Murder House, there's a Hotel. There's Freak Show, which is one of the worst seasons ever, which is a shame because Jessica Lange, great actress she is, starred in those ones. But I've got very high hopes for this one. I think this is American Horror Story back at its best.
I might give it a go. It sounds good, and I love Billie Lord as well. I'm a big fan of her.
She's incredible as Montana. Yeah. And again, she's had a great year so far. She stole the show with Booksmart.
She's incredible in that
film.
What
a film that is.
She stole it. And if you loved her in Booksmart, you will enjoy her in 1984. But I think she's off.
It's just too much, man. It's like, it's intimidating. I'm like, there's so many different ones.
Yeah.
I don't know what order. Yeah. Some will tell me you need to watch this certain episode until you watch it. And I'm like, fuck off, I can't be asked.
But this is it, because there are...
Can't.
There are harkbacks to seasons back in the past. So
forget it.
Yeah,
that's not going to happen.
I friggin' love it.
If it's all 80s, though, if it's ever going to get me, this is the time.
Oh, yeah.
But, yeah. Just too much.
You've not even watched Stranger Things. You're going to start another 80s show.
Yeah, fuck that.
Mark, what's your pick this week?
It's easy, man. There's one thing this week that happened out of the blue. I wasn't expecting it. Suddenly got an email. Black Peaks have got a new single out.
Ah. Hey.
What the fuck? Will's been very out of the scene right now because obviously he had sepsis, so he's really fucking ill. They cancelled the tour with Smashing Pumpkins. They couldn't do half of the dates. All the European dates were pulled, and I was thinking, oh man, I really hope they're going to be back because we saw them in Milton Keynes, and they were phenomenal.
Yep.
I think their album last year made my top five of the year. And just out of the blue came this single. It's called King. And for me, it's easily the song of the year. Will's back with a vengeance. His vocals are on another level that I've ever heard before. The drumming and everything. You can tell they've been listening to Tool and Mastodon. It's got everything. But in a 5-minute song, it captures so many different genres. They've brought out a video on the same day by Sam Lees. It's all filmed in India. It's got budget behind it. It looks amazing. It's a song about struggle. So, you know, he's just took this whole time out. They must have just done it on the download, not told anyone. There was no footage of them going in the studio, and it just came out of nowhere. I'm not just saying this because it's new. It's the best song they've ever recorded. It's fucking sensational from start to finish. It's amazing, man. They're not doing an album off it. It's just they just said, and I spoke to them, they said they just sat down, they thought, this is a great song. They sat there, they just did it, and they just thought, let's just fucking release it because it's great. Let's not wait for an album. Let's just get it out there for the fans that are coming to the tour and have stuck by us from all these bad shit happening to us. And honestly, it's the best thing you could ask for. It's phenomenal.
Is that the one that you played in the car the other day?
But yeah, but we're kind of...
We were talking over it, so I didn't really listen to it properly.
Yeah.
I'm going to back Mark up on this. I think it's a phenomenal song.
Yeah.
I listened to it on Animac the other
week,
this week. Yeah. And I did hear the interview he did with her as well. He really went through some shit in order to get where he is now. But the song is absolutely fantastic. I'm a real big fan. And off the back of it, I have started listening to Black Peaks.
Good.
Excellent.
So that's what... If people now go and check that song out, then go and listen to All That Divides because it's one of the best albums ever.
It's a great Slow Seas.
Yeah, unbelievable tune.
Yeah.
And they're on tour as well in the next few weeks.
Fantastic news. I assume you're going.
Yeah, I've got tickets for three of the dates.
Crikey.
So, yeah.
Excellent stuff. And my pick this week is a graphic novel. It's called Jim Cornette Presents Behind the Curtain, Real Pro Wrestling Stories.
Nice.
Now, Jim Cornette is a legend within the wrestling business with a career spanning almost 40 years. In that time, he's been a manager, a trainer, a booker, and currently he's best known for his podcast. He's a very divisive figure in wrestling as he's highly opinionated and very, very old school. He pretty much despises modern wrestling, which he dismisses as being flippy shit. He's not a fan. And I love the dude. I disagree with like 75% of what he says, but I love the way he says it nonetheless. So he's partnered up with IDW Comics to release this graphic novel, Behind the Curtain. And the book features behind-the-scenes stories about some of the giants of the industry. So there are stories in there about Ric Flair, Bret Hart, Shawn Michaels, as well as lesser-known characters like Sputnik Monro. And the stories are funny and enlightening. Some of them are well-known, like the Montreal Screwjob, but others will be new to you. They were certainly new to me. And Corny is the perfect man to tell these stories because he lived through them. He's been in the business so long. It's a great-looking book, too, as well. The art is by a chap called Dennis Medry, and it's really gorgeous and crisp and vibrant. The colouring's amazing as well. It's a great read if you, like me, are a comics and wrestling nerd. And the great thing is there are so many incredible true-life wrestling stories out there that I'm hoping this is just the first of many books because they could certainly do a whole series of these. But it's a great read, and I highly recommend it.
Wonderful.
You got a likeness of me being able to do that because it's a lot of pictures, so I will fly through it. But like you said, if it's going to come from the horse's mouth, you want it to come from him.
Yes.
There's not going to be any bullshit.
No.
I take it WWE, are they happy with it or are they furious?
They have nothing to do with it. I imagine they're not best pleased about it.
Vince is fucking going mad right now. Oh, shit.
I always used to think he looked like one of those preachers you see on evangelical TV shows in the
80s. Yeah.
You know, he's about to tell you need to get down on your knees and pray, damn it.
A lot but of priests back then asked them to go on their knees and do other stuff.
There we go.
That's some real variety of recommendations this time around.
Yeah.
Hodgepodge.
My favourite part of the whole podcast now is hearing what people come up with because there's so much.
Yes.
Indeed. On Facebook, Simon Williams has said, Parks and Recreation on Amazon Prime.
Yes!
Ron Swanson is one of the great TV characters and Chris Pratt is hilarious. Every episode is comedy gold. We don't disagree with you here, Simon.
100% true.
Unbelievable.
We all love Parks and Rec. On Twitter, Jeremy at JZerby00 has said, Borderlands 3 is hands down the best release in the franchise. I can't put the game down or say enough good things.
I've never played those games, but the reviews are insane. Mm-hmm. Everyone just says it's like the game of the year already, and it's just, I've just never got time to play games, but it looks good.
It does look good. On Instagram, Andrew, aka KingGrimlock85, has said, I'm going to recommend James O'Brien's podcast and radio show on LBC. His analysis of the current political situation and other hot topics is always logical and on point. He is very good, James O'Brien. He's a real firebrand. I enjoy listening to him.
He sticks up for people, doesn't he? Mm-hmm. Doesn't allow for bullshit to be happening on his show.
Good.
Yeah.
On Twitter, @_ObiMoo has said, right now I'm binging on State of the Union on the BBC iPlayer. It stars Rosamund Pike and Chris O'Dowd. It's written by Nick Hornby and directed by Stephen Frears. It's really funny, pretty sweet, and hugely thoughtful. Have you guys heard of this?
No.
I've heard of it, but I've not got around to watching it. I've heard good things, though.
Yeah, so it was broadcast in America initially, earlier on in the year, and there are only 10 episodes, and each one's only 10 minutes long.
Oh!
Whoa. It's about the couple. They go to kind of a marriage therapist, and then each episode takes place in the pub across the road from their marriage therapy, where they basically discuss what they're going through.
Oh, that sounds good.
And the Creative Arts Emmys were released last week. The winners were announced, and both O'Dowd and Pike won Emmys for their performances in the short-form acting category. So I am going to check that out. On Facebook, Pete Vine has said, the book This Is Going to Hurt by comedian Adam Kay. It's his diary entries from his days as a junior doctor. It's hilarious one minute and heartbreaking the next. An unbelievable read.
Wow. Ooh.
Sounds very good. I'm not familiar with Adam Kay. I've not heard of him before, but I'm going to check that
sounds
out.
Sounds a good book.
It does. Mm. On Twitter, Red and Blue Dave TLG, @RedandBlueDave, has said, the new Lindsay Sterling album, Artemis. It's a violin/hip-hop/dubstep fusion.
Fucking hell.
And he says, it's great if you like something a little bit different. I've never heard of Lindsay Sterling. Have either of you?
No, it sounds mad.
Violin, hip-hop, dubstep.
Sign
me
up.
That's what I want.
On Instagram, Charlotte, aka Mosley Shores, has said, gotta recommend The Dark Side Detective on the Nintendo Switch. It's a brilliant point-and-click about a paranormal detective with a beautiful pixel art style and Monkey Island-esque humour.
Oh, Monkey Island!
I used to love the Monkey Island games.
Bloody hell.
And I love point-and-click games.
Yes, there you me go. Too.
They're great fun, so I think I'm going to check that out. On Facebook, Simon Armstrong has said, I'm watching Wu-Tang Clan, an American Saga, which is a retelling of the Wu-Tang Clan origin story. The acting's pretty decent and the soundtrack is obviously incredible.
I want to watch this.
Yeah,
some good stuff, man.
on Twitter, Tam Lizanne O'Driscoll at Tam Lizanne said, "Unbelievable on Netflix. Merritt Weaver is the standout performance, but it's an amazing series." Have either of you watched Unbelievable yet?
I've been, I'm halfway through it.
Yeah.
It is astounding. And yes, Merritt Weaver is the fucking queen of the world.
Merritt Weaver's amazing. Caitlin Dever's brilliant as well. I watched it all last weekend.
Yeah.
It's a tough watch.
It is.
It's a tough show to watch, but it's brilliantly
especially
acted.
Especially when you contrast episode one to episode two and the difference each
What's
victim.
It about?
Well,
it's based on a true story about a young girl who was raped, and she reported the rape to the police, and the police basically didn't believe her story, so they effectively forced her into recanting it, and then they had her arrested for wasting police time.
Fucking hell.
And it turned out that she was in fact raped, and it didn't come out until years later when the guy who raped her then had raped other women using the exact same MO that he'd used, so they realised that she wasn't lying. It's a tough watch.
It is, but you won't find anything as good of acting.
Netflix. Right, cool.
Yeah, the acting caliber is so high.
Yeah, fuck. It's only like 8 episodes. Yeah.
Sounds heavy.
It is heavy. Very, very bleak. And then finally, Alex Ravel on Facebook agrees with you, Mark. He said the new Blackpink song, King.
I like that guy.
Mm-hmm. It might be a girl. I don't know if it's a male or female.
Well, I
don't want to assume.
I like them a lot.
I like that person, whatever gender they might be.
Yes.
So please do keep sending in your recommendations. You can get us on Twitter at STTPodcast or facebook.com/skiptotheendpodcast, Instagram at skiptotheendpodcast, or email us podcast@skiptotheend.co.uk. So that brings us to the end of another episode of the Skip to the End podcast, and I'm so tired. I just want to go to bed.
You've probably heard this a lot, but that's quite a little then, isn't it? The episode, not your. Oh,
I didn't know what he was on about.
Where was that going?
When he takes his pants off.
I mean,
that's short.
I am just sitting here waiting to wrap up the episode, and you're already talking about whatever you're talking about.
There you were. How bizarre.
Did not see that coming.
Like this episode needed to be any more bizarre. It's as bizarre as Space Monkeys.
Do you remember that song? How bizarre.
Yeah.
How bizarre.
Do you have that as the outro music?
Yeah. Okay, put it in.
What
have we got coming up on the next episode, Gemma?
Oh my goodness me. How about this for a main review? Joker.
Wow.
Mic drop.
Oh my god. I
can't believe
it.
I'm a little bit excited for that one.
Yes.
Yeah, just a tad.
Mark, who are we masturbating over?
Oh, it's the one and only Cameron Crowe.
Mm-hmm.
That's a big one.
Yeah. For you, yeah.
But for everyone, you guys are going to struggle.
You know what? For a split second, I genuinely thought you were going to go Cameron Diaz.
Oh, we've all masturbated
over
her.
Just for a very split second.
Ooh, that red dress.
Oh, yeah, don't get me started. Gemma, what's our rewatch?
Our rewatch is Hot Fuzz.
Oh, man.
Because we've done The World's End, we've done Shaun of the Dead, now it's time for the trilogy to be complete.
In the different order, but
in the different order, yeah.
Yarp.
Whoops.
Yarp. And our topic of conversation next time round, it's the top three great performances from otherwise bad actors. So we're talking about those actors who the world at large think are shite. We're not talking about people you just don't like. We're talking about people who are generally considered to be rubbish at their jobs.
Are we on about in present day? Because you could say Nicolas Cage, but he's not a bad actor.
See, I wouldn't agree with that.
Yeah,
he's an over-the-top actor, but he's not a bad actor, so I wouldn't count that one.
Yeah. I mean, perhaps a Razzie winner, maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe. But to be honest, whatever your answer is, as long as you can justify it,
I want to see that new film with John Travolta, that Limp Bizkit guy.
I've seen it. It's abysmally bad, but it's one of those films that's so bad that you love it. It's fucking brilliant.
Is it like Mac and Me in the Room?
Not quite that level, no.
Is it The Fanatic?
Yeah, and Travolta is hamming it up something chronic. The thing is, the direction by Fred Durst is actually pretty good.
Yeah.
It's a good-looking film, but I don't know what Travolta's on. He's on some crazy shit there.
Oh, sign me up.
Worth a watch, though.
Cool.
And we'll have all the other usual stuff that you're used to from the Skip to the End podcast. We'll give away a crazy amount of prizes. We'll have some more pop culture recommendations. Now, I think we should wrap this up before I pass out.
Let's get you to bed.
See you in 2 weeks.
How bizarre. How bizarre. How bizarre. Ooh, baby. Ooh, baby. It's making me crazy. It's making me crazy. Every time I look around, every time I look around, every time I look around.